The news, pouring oil on troubled waters for the Prime Minister, the idea of that fuel duty hike, President Trump speaking about oil supplies.
Earlier today, the International Energy Agency agreed to coordinate the release of a record 400 million barrels of oil, which will substantially reduce the oil prices.
In other news,
a teenage girl stabbed, a school in Norfolk on lockdown, and a 15-year-old boy arrested. I'm LBC's Shivani Sharma with the details.
Plus, after the horror fire in Glasgow, do those vape shops carry a fire risk? We'll look at that. And be careful, it can make you go blind. No, those slimming pills, a suggestion at least, as yet unproven, but one of concern. Those stories all follow the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, Sir Keir Starmer is expected to face further questions about his decision to appoint Peter Mandelson as US ambassador. It's emerged the Prime Minister was warned of a general reputational risk over the peer's links to Jeffrey Epstein. Files also revealed Lord Mandelson was paid a £75,000 severance payment after he was sacked. Conservative MP Sir James Cleverly has told LBC the documents are concerning.
I suspect the government paying Mandelson anything at all is a tacit admission that it was the government that fell short. And what we know from these documents is the Prime Minister, the Foreign Secretary at the time, David Lammy, were warned about the risk and they went ahead with the appointment anyway.
Ministers have acknowledged that due diligence fell short. Peter Mandelson denies any wrongdoing in relation to Epstein. Oil prices have risen again despite the release of millions of barrels of emergency reserves in response to the war in the Middle East. Brent crude is currently trading at around $98 a barrel. Yesterday, 32 countries agreed to release 400 million barrels, roughly what the world consumes in 4 days. Speaking in Kentucky overnight, President Trump appeared to suggest that he doesn't plan to end America's war in Iran anytime soon.
After midnight hammering, then we left, we figured that'll be the end of them for a while. But they started again. That's why we got to finish it, right? We don't want to go back every 2 years. But oil prices are already coming back down, and it's going to come down. But we're not leaving until that job is finished, and it's going to be very fast.
Attacks on commercial shipping near Gulf countries have continued overnight. MPs will assess whether student loans are fair to graduates as part of an inquiry into the system in England. The Treasury Committee will examine the recent decision to freeze the repayment threshold for many graduates. Tech firms are being urged to do more to protect children online, with regulators warning current safeguards are not strong enough. Regulators have given companies until the end of April to explain what actions they're taking. And weather warnings for wind are in force for northern areas of the UK. Yellow alerts cover parts of Scotland, Northern Ireland, Northern England and Northern Wales. Gusts could exceed 70 miles per hour in some areas. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 10,535. It closed down 58 yesterday. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.15. LBC weather, windy with some heavy rain spreading across northern areas of the UK. Patchy rain and sunny spells in the southeast. A high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Get the unstoppable Samsung Galaxy S26 with serious processing power. It gets you gaming and streaming seamlessly when you're out and about. Right now, you can save £16 per month on the UK's best network. And if you're trading your old device, you can save even more. Get yours today on EE. Launch offer ends 30th of March.
Saving on minimum 24-month 125GB Essentials Airtime Plan. Eligibility, credit check and terms apply. Credit by EE Limited. Verify best network at ee.co.uk/claims.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Warned you 4 minutes after 7, Thursday, March the 12th, when Judgment Day became Judgment Pay. Booted unceremoniously out of office, our former Mandelson in Washington asked for more than £500,000. They didn't give him that, but he got £75,000 of our money, having lied on his job application, effectively. How do they justify that? And Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer would appear to be in a very tight corner. He was warned and warned and warned and warned four times and yet went ahead with it. Staying with the Prime Minister, are we in line for a 15th U-turn? This one about the fuel duty hike.
Mr. Speaker, the fuel duty is frozen. It's going to remain frozen until September. And we will keep the situation under review in light of what's happening in Iran.
But pressure continues to build. Back home.
After a fire ripped through buildings near Glasgow Central Station, politicians are now demanding routine fire checks at vape shops. I'm LBC's Henry Riley, finding out about the potential risks of vapes with a fire safety expert.
Plus, just days after the LBC Online Safety Day, we hear that online firms are being warned by Ofcom, keep underage children off your platforms. We'll hear more from Ofcom on that. And be careful, it can make you go blind. No, not that. Those slimming pills.
To my mind, it's the only thing that caused it. I wasn't asleep. I didn't have high blood pressure. So I don't think that it was a normal event.
That's Peter, one of a growing number of people claiming weight loss drugs have affected their eyesight, or indeed, in his case, lost their eyesight. We'll give you the full background on that later in the show.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Having assured the nation, speaking in the House of Commons in September, that, and I quote, full due process, close quotes, was followed in the appointment of Lord Mandelson, Sir Keir Starmer would seem to be in a ticklish spot, because clearly it was not. Natasha Clarke, LBC's political editor, joins me now with the full background. Quite a day, Natasha, yesterday. Yes. Good morning.
Absolutely. And Nick, the worst is yet to come for Sir Keir Starmer in terms of these Mandelson files. We know £75,000 now has been paid to a man sacked as our ambassador to Washington. The government said at the time this represents good value for money. Just one of the revelations in those Mandelson files released yesterday. Originally, Nick, he asked for £500,000. He said it basically was the entire sum of the 4 years he was meant to spend in the job. There were subtle languages in some of those emails appearing to suggest he may take the government to a tribunal if he didn't get some form of payout. Now, the government were concerned that that would cost several hundred thousand pounds overall. The Prime Minister's Chief Secretary, Darren Jones, told MPs last night the government found the sum inappropriate.
Peter Mandelson initially requested a sum that was substantially larger than the final payment. Not just two or even three times, but more than six times the final amount. Despite the fact that he was withdrawn from Washington because he had lost the confidence of the Prime Minister. The government obviously found that to be inappropriate and unacceptable.
The government have since said he should give that now to charity. The former Foreign Secretary, Sir James Cleverly, says the government shouldn't have given him a penny.
So the fact he asked for this outrageous sum of money is unsurprising. The fact the government paid him a single penny is frankly amazing, because if he lied to get the job, then the government should have taken him to court, would have won, and would have not had to pay him a penny. I suspect the government paying Mandelson anything at all is a tacit admission that it was the government that fell short.
Now, elsewhere in those 147 pages, Nick, of which, of course, I've read every single one, we have a string of emails and documents surrounding Lord Mandelson's appointment. On page two, officials set out to the Prime Minister the risks of hiring a, quote, political appointee. It says, if anything goes wrong, you could be more exposed, as the individual is more connected to you personally. The Prime Minister's National Security Advisor, Jonathan Powell, found the appointment process unusually and weirdly rushed. We learned that he raised concerns with Number 10. At the time. Nick, we also have seen now a copy of the initial vetting report the Prime Minister saw before he decided to give Lord Mandelson the job. It says, quotes, after Epstein was first convicted of procuring an underage girl in 2008, their relationship continued across 2009 to 2011. It also notes those allegations, which were allegations at the time. Mandelson reportedly stayed in Epstein's house when he was in jail in June 2009. So that evidence there, clear in black and white, the Prime Minister admitted that earlier this year, and of course it nearly led to his downfall. The files also show Mandelson was offered confidential briefings from the 6th of January. That was before his official employment began in February 2024 and before those final vettings would have been completed. We should also say Lord Mandelson, facing that police investigation, he denies wrongdoing, but it is more embarrassment for the Prime Minister about his judgment. Yesterday, Kemi Badenoch said the Prime Minister was dishonest about what he knew.
As much as the Prime Minister wanted to make this about Peter Mandelson, this is really about Keir Starmer being dishonest with them, with the country, with Parliament, about what he knew. There are not enough Conservative MPs to remove the Prime Minister. He won a landslide. I think Labour MPs now need to consider their conscience and their position and ask if this man is fit to run our country.
But, Nick, there's a big hole in these files, Nick, and we don't yet know what happened next. We see some of these emails which talked about the Chief of Staff discussing Peter's relationship with Jeffrey Epstein. They say the Director of Communications is satisfied with his responses about conduct. That is, of course, Lord Matthew Doyle. He is the Prime Minister's former Chief of Communications, and Morgan McSweeney. They're both no longer in the government. So, as of yet, the Prime Minister not able to prove his case conclusively that Lord Mandelson did lie about his appointment. There's more to come, Nick.
Yes, indeed, and both Lord Doyle and Matthew McSweeney, of course, close friends of Peter Mandelson. I think I've read we don't know when the next dump of files, is that correct?
We don't. The government have said that they will release more, but it depends on the Met investigation into Peter Mandelson.
Oh, I see. OK. Natasha Clark, LBC's political editor, reporting the full political ramifications with Conservative Sir Ian Duncan-Smith in just a moment. But let's just pick up on this idea of the necessity to make this payment. Daniel Barnett, of course, you'll know, he's on the LBC team sheet. He presents LBC's Legal Hour Saturday nights from 9. He's employment barrister at Outer Temple Chambers, and he joins me now. Daniel, we heard there from Sir James Cleverly, the Conservative, there should have been no need to pay, quotes, a single penny. Is Sir James right, Daniel? Morning to you, sport.
Morning, Nick. Yeah, he might have a point. There's a breakdown here. We know the £75,000 was made up of two things. There was £40,000 in notice, which represents 3 months' salary for Peter Mandelson, his notice period, and a £35,000 special payment, an ex gratia payment, in essence. Whether or not he was entitled to that £40,000 notice depends on one simple thing. Did he lie to get the job? If he lied to get the job, he can be dismissed without notice. He's not entitled to that £40,000. But proving he lied and that the government relied on his lie, which is also a step, would have been tricky. Yes, he might not have revealed the full truth. We don't know. But that's very different from saying he actively lied. We'd have to prove things happened in connection with Epstein, or rather the government would, that may not be entirely easy to prove. So it makes sense the government said we don't want that battle in court. It would be unedifying. And of course, the last thing the government wants is to go to court and try to say that Mandelson was a bad man, because that's just going to mean they get egg on their face at the end of the day. So it makes sense that they don't actively say Mandelson lied rather than just didn't reveal the whole truth. As for the £35,000 ex gratia, apparently Peter Mandelson was saying, I've got an unfair dismissal claim. I can claim for the balance of my 4 years ambassadorial tenure, which would have been about £500,000. And I'm not going to get another job because my reputation's been so tarnished. That's where the £500,000 comes from. His problem, legally, is really, really simple. To claim unfair dismissal, you've got to have 2 years' employment. And he didn't, so he couldn't. So that really kiboshes his entire £500,000 claim.
Lastly, and briefly, if you will, because we've got a little bounce on your line, had your counsel been sought, and this is, you're speaking now as a barrister, so not as a commentator or as a regular member of the public, as a barrister, an employment barrister, you can see the deal's worth doing for the government.
Always settle if you can, because to spend tens or hundreds of thousands of pounds on legal costs is unhelpful. To have your reputation for both sides dragged through the courts in public is unhelpful.
Catch Daniel Barnard on Saturday nights at 9. He's presenter of the LBC Legal Hour and an employment barrister at Outer Temple Chambers. Daniel, as ever, thanks for your input. 13 after 7. That's the employment, or the legal side, as it were. Let's come to the political side. Sir Ian Duncan-Smith, former leader of the Conservative Party, former Cabinet Minister, Conservative MP, joins me now. Sir Ian, when I remind you, and you'll be aware of this, and in September, and I quote, the Prime Minister said that full due process was followed, he told the House. Can I put it to you, he lied to the House? Sir Ian, good morning.
Good morning, good morning. I have to say that when he said on the 10th of September that full due process was followed, he knew, as they said once before, he was being, how can I put it, economical with the actuality. I mean, the reality is he was telling you only a bit of it, which is the due process as a process went through. Whether it was comprehensive enough, of course, these papers are showing it was not. And he didn't say anything about Jonathan Powell and others saying to him, why was this so weirdly rushed? And you're, as this opens up, and there's more to come, I think, it shows categorically that Starmer knew what he was doing when he came to the House and said on the 10th of September that it, due process was followed. It wasn't followed in the end of the day, and so there is a charge now of misleading, lying to the House of Commons at the time, because he knew more, and he should have said that when he was standing in front of members of Parliament, that, yes, the process factually may have had its time, but what they discovered was not then told to the House of Commons, which would have been that Mandelson had actually not even lied, had just failed to reveal what were the case was. So the Prime Minister himself has a case to answer.
Let me put this to you, Sir Ian. I've known you for a long time. You're a pragmatic bloke. Times in Washington are not normal. Donald Trump, whatever you think of him, is an erratic president to be alongside. Did we need the sort of deal-maker, the sort of courtier that Lord Peter Mandelson could have provided rather than a fully diplomatic role?
Well, I believe that's the reason why the Prime Minister rushed everything through, was determined to get him, even though others had questioned his veracity and the appointment in total, inside his team as well as outside. Mm. Many people, myself included, all said, how can you appoint this man when already his track record, we didn't know enough about the Epstein stuff, but his track record alone about lying and about being sacked from cabinet, about having very dodgy arrangements going on, as we understand it, in some of his dealings in his business time with China. All of this was a reason why the man should not have been appointed. It was too risky to have such an individual with his record in the job. But he was determined to do it because exactly that. He thought that he would have a better chance of getting America on side if he had somebody who he thought was good at persuading people of their issues. The reality is, though, that he closed his eyes to every other reason why he shouldn't have had it, and that comes down to the Prime Minister's judgment above all, and with all the others. And some of the team around him who've now gone were also guilty of pursuing Mandelson's successful appointment as ambassador. You know, Doyle, his chief of communications, he didn't say exactly what the truth was, and it seems like others didn't too, but it's...
I will leave it there. Sir Ian Duncan-Smith, thank you. You're a former cabinet minister, you were leader of the Conservative Party, you are a Conservative MP at Chingford and Woodford Green. So, in a sense, can some of the blame be laid at Trump? It was a gamble. Politicians take gambles, they take risks, they roll the dice, they hope it comes up six, sometimes it comes up one. And we are not living in normal times. It was a gamble. In a sense, does it track back to Trump? We'll take your views on that. And as we're speaking of the president...
But oil prices are already coming back down, and it's going to come down, but we're not leaving until that job is finished, and it's going to be very fast.
Are those prices coming down? And what about that fuel duty hike due in soon as September? More on that later. 7:15 LBC News headlines now. Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer is expected to face further questions about his decision to appoint Peter Mandelson as US ambassador. The price of oil has risen again overnight as more ships come under attack in the Gulf. And MPs will assess whether student loans are fair to graduates as part of an inquiry into the system. LBC weather, windy with some heavy rain spreading across northern areas of the UK. Patchy rain and sunny spells in the southeast, a high of 14 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. On the trains, Great Western Railway services remain suspended between Marlow and Bournemouth. It's because of a track problem. On the Underground, there are minor delays on the Northern Line, but the delays on the District Line have now cleared. On the roads, one lane is closed on the M23 southbound just before the M25 junction, and that's following an accident. And then also on the M23, there are delays southbound to Junction 10 at Crawley. A lorry's broken down. It's on the exit slip road, but there are delays back into the main carriageway. Very busy on the A3 northbound heading up towards Hook, and also the A40 is slow this morning eastbound heading towards Park Royal. It's slow all the way back to the Greenford flyover.
This is LBC.
Did you know that if you buy your train tickets early, you could get a better price with Southeastern Advance Tickets? Whether you're planning a fun family day out or heading into town for a meeting, the earlier you buy, the cheaper your ticket could be. See our terms and conditions to check if it's the right ticket for you. Buy your advance train tickets now from the Southeastern app or website and pay no booking fees.
Southeastern. Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped for the future you want. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Imad, a GCSE student in Year 11.
Alongside my core GCSEs, such as Maths, English and Science, I study creative subjects such as Media, Drama, Art and Design, Business and Music Technology, which are all recognised by the industry.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in Years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
A message from TfL.
I saw Alicia's photo in my newsfeed. All I can think of is her family. How they're getting on. If they're getting on. I didn't look when I pulled out, and she never made it home. Sounds crazy, but it felt like her motorbike came out of nowhere. But I know the truth. I didn't look again.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
20 minutes after 7, coming to your reactions in just a moment. Does it track back to Trump? Dennis, you'll be the first caller on the Mandelson affair. It is quite rightly the front page of all the newspapers, even the Financial Times, even the oil price, even the markets. They all take second place. For the FT, for the Financial Times, aide warned Starmer of risk in Mandelson's appointment. And it's the front page of all the other newspapers as well. The Daily Mail, I'll just pick a couple at random. The Daily Mail picking up on the words of Kemi Badenoch, not fit to lead the country. The Daily Telegraph, Starmer ignored top aides over Mandelson. The Daily Mirror, I remind you, very much a Labour-supporting newspaper. I wish you find it a bit difficult to talk about the judgment of the Prime Minister. Instead, they go to Mandelson. Mandelson demanded £500,000 payoff, shameless peers, cash bid. It is worth saying, of that £500,000, it's actually £547,000, I don't know how he got to that exact figure, he's still got £75,000, and we just heard from Daniel Barnett, who is, of course, on the LBC team sheet, that the to be pragmatic, there was a case to pay it, but what sort of look does it give? So many aspects of that to pick up on. Let's go for the calls now. Dennis is in Chelmsford. Dennis, you're on the radio. What do you want to take from this first? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, I think it's another repetition of poor judgment from, yes, from Starmer. Severely poor, and it's just an echo chamber of poor judgments. I mean, I think that he did it. I think many people think that he appointed Mandelson to avoid having to appoint Nigel Farage as the ambassador, as Trump.
Do you think that's what it was? You don't think he was rolling the dice, hoping he would put a man who would get very close to Trump, who is very good at as a courtier, shall we say? Do you not think it was that idea?
Well, I think that's part of it, but it was done so quickly. So why was it done so quickly? If it was a clever move, a legal move, and let's face it, he's a lawyer through and through, it would have had more time on it. But the U-turns, it's just the poor judgment. Chagos, tax, Andy Burnham, you know.
Farmers, winter fuel payments, on and on it goes. Yep,
yeah,
absolutely.
Exactly. I would definitely not give this guy a penny. I know it's an on-principle thing. He's contractually in a difficult position, ironically, being a lawyer, but I wouldn't give the guy a penny, Mandelson.
Dennis, can I pick up on the words from Kemi Badenoch? Starmer is not fit to lead the country. Quick word on that from you.
Well, I agree. I think problem is the world lacks good leaders at the moment, doesn't it? That's the sad situation we're in. But he's a lawyer. Morally, I think he's probably quite a decent guy, but that doesn't make a good leader.
Thank you for that. It's such poor leadership. It's a wonder he manages to put on socks of the same colour each morning. Surprised he doesn't come out with one black and one brown the way this is. Seamus is in Wallington. Seamus, your reaction? This really is damning of Starmer, isn't it?
It's not great, Nick. Good morning. But this was a decision that a lot of people would have made. We would have held our nose, looked away and wanted the box ticked. And we would have probably said, just give me a brush so I can get this through. Now, I don't like Starmer. I can't stand the bloke.
Even with the briefings, Seamus, that you and I were not privy to. Seamus.
I want Starmer held. Nick, I want Starmer held to account. But we needed this guy at this time because we were in a really tight corner. I don't like the decision, but sometimes you have to hold your nose, Nick. And I'd like this guy brought down for what he truly is, which is a traitor and a coward. I don't. On this one, this is a bad decision, but a lot of people would have made it. And sometimes,
but Seamus, I have to challenge you. You say a lot of people would have made it. We now know he was privy. He, the Prime Minister, was privy to briefings that showed that Mandelson had lied about a close relationship with the most infamous paedophile on the planet. He'd stayed in that paedophile's apartment while he, the paedophile, was in jail. He'd lied about his relationship with Ghislaine Maxwell, who was in jail as well for association. He was also, the company he was with, was under investigation for dealings, including those for failing to disclose the Qatari Free Zones Authority as a client. Every which way you look, this is problematical. I haven't even mentioned that he'd been fired twice from ministerial posts. I'm sorry, you say hold your nose. The stink would have filled the room. Seamus.
Oh dear, Nick, the more you talk, the worse this sounds.
Well, it's only the reality,
it's
buddy.
And a lot of things, Nick, it's not necessarily sometimes the actual decision, it's the lies and the cover up that make it an awful lot worse. I actually believe part of what Starmer is saying. I don't think he knew the full extent of all of this. I think he expected people to give him the nod, and he put pressure on people to give him the nod.
But people did, including the then UK ambassador to the US, including Jonathan Powell, for whom I don't carry a brief. A lot of people did. Seamus, I must leave it there. Thank you for your input on the show. You have yourself a safe day. We shall return to that conversation. And indeed, we are going to hear from a government minister who's been handed the hospital pass of trying to defend this. They're talking about improving the way these checks are made in the future. But let's go elsewhere. And the International Energy Agency, a developed nation body founded in the 1970s to deal with oil crisis, whose membership includes the UK, announced the latest emergency oil release in its history yesterday. Executive Director Faith Birol.
I can now announce that IEA countries have unanimously decided to launch the largest ever release of emergency oil stocks in our agency's history. IEA countries will be making 400 million barrels of oil available.
And is this in the face of a crisis? Well, one man would say otherwise.
After midnight hammering, then we left. We figured that'll be the end of them for a while. But they started again. That's why we got to finish it, right? We don't want to go back every 2 years. But oil prices are already coming back down, and it's going to come down. But we're not leaving until that job is finished, and it's going to be very fast. It's going to be very fast. But
President Trump speaking at a rally in Kentucky. Let's go straight to the region and join Inzaman Rashid, who is a journalist and Monocle's Gulf correspondent. Monocle is a global hub covering international affairs, and he's now overlooking the entrance to the Strait of Hormuz and joins me now. What is the latest situation there? What are you hearing about the prospect of oil prices over the coming days or weeks? Morning to you.
Morning, Nick. Yeah, just looking over the entrance of the Strait of Hormuz, and in the very hazy distance, I can see dozens and dozens, if not hundreds, of cargo, tankers, vessels are all currently anchored down, and they have been for around 8 or 9 days now because the Strait of Hormuz is completely blocked by the Iranian military. It's de facto blocked because there is no specific border that they've put up not to allow ships through, but they are targeting vessels that do attempt to cross. We've seen that in a number of incidents over the last few days. We woke up this morning, there were another 3 oil tankers that had been attacked in the Gulf overnight. Yesterday, we saw another 3 targeted, one of them actually turning off its transponders and its signals and trying to make a very risky crossing along the Strait of Hormuz. We saw 3 Thai crew members had died as a result. 20 had been rescued by the Omani Navy. So these are now what were once very busy waterways where 20% of the world's oil passes through. These are now very dangerous and perilous waters because they are in control of the Iranian regime. There's also suggestions now as well that are reports coming out that Iran has managed to actually plant a handful of mines in the Strait of Hormuz, which of course would be the worst case scenario for oil tankers trying to pass through. It would also be the worst case scenario for the oil markets as well. We've seen the prices hike once again this morning, completely opposite to what Donald Trump said last night at that rally in Kentucky. And clearly, this is now where the focus of this conflict is, because yes, you've got all the military aggression going on between Iran and Israel, Iran attacking the Gulf states as well with Hezbollah in Lebanon. But it's here where we're now seeing not only military aggression as a result of Iran targeting vessels, but we are seeing the economic effects of what's happening here in the Strait of Hormuz around the world.
Lastly, is there any credibility to President Trump saying that he believed 58 Iranian naval ships have been destroyed by the US military, Inzaman?
Well, there is credibility in the sense that CENTCOM, the armed forces, essentially released some footage showing them striking Iranian boats. And these seemed small Iranian boats just kind of randomly parked up around some ports in Iran. So there is footage showing them blowing up boats, but we don't know whether these have specifically been Navy boats tasked to mine in the Strait of Hormuz, because we know that Iran has got many thousands and thousands of these dangerous mines that they can plot in the Strait of Hormuz. So we do know there have been attacks, but we don't know to the extent of how many Navy vessels per se have been targeted. You've got to remember, Nick, Iran does have a huge armory of weapons, whether it is these Shahed drones, which are very cheap to make and they've been firing in their hundreds to the Gulf countries, whether it is ballistic missiles that they've also been using into Israel, into the other Gulf states, but also, particularly when it comes to the Strait of Hormuz, which I'm looking over right now, they've also got submersibles that could be used. They've got fast boats that can be launched if they need to. So they do have the defense capabilities, the attack capabilities to use here on the Strait of Hormuz if Donald Trump decides that he wants to bring US Navy vessels to try and escort ship through the Strait of Hormuz, or if we see, of course, British Navy vessels coming to do the same thing like we saw with the Gulf War back in the 80s. But I
will leave it there. Inzaman Rashid, thank you. International journalist, a Gulf correspondent for Monocle, a hub covering international affairs, business and design, joining us as he's reported looking out over the Strait of Hormuz. All right, let's come to stories after news back home.
$75 billion valuation, 70 million customers, and now, at last, for Revolut, a full banking license in the UK. I'm Christian May from City AM, discussing this with Nick shortly.
Plus,
a teenage girl stabbed, a school in Norfolk on lockdown, and a 15-year-old boy arrested. I'm LBC's Shivani Sharma with the details.
Terror in the classroom and calls. Of course, David, you'll be coming in for calls as well. We'll take those after the news. 7:31, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrar, LBC News Time. Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer is facing renewed scrutiny over his decision to appoint Peter Mandelson as ambassador to Washington. Files show the Prime Minister was warned of a general reputational risk over the peer's links to Jeffrey Epstein. Oil prices have risen again as Iran intensifies attacks on ships in the Gulf. Prices haven't fallen despite 32 countries agreeing to release 400 million barrels of oil yesterday. And MPs are going to examine the fairness of student loan repayments. The Treasury Committee will look into growing concerns about Plan 2 loans in England and Wales. LBC weather, windy with some heavy rain spreading across northern areas of the UK. Some patchy rain and sunny spells in the southeast, a high of 14 degrees.
On the latest episode of The News Agents.
America wants to end the war, but does Iran? And do they now hold all the keys?
Get the latest episode of The News Agents with Emily Maitlis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the
The tax year end on April the 5th is approaching. So don't let your 2025-26 tax-free cash ISA allowance go to waste. Make the most of it with a 4.01% rate from Marcus by Goldman Sachs, the five-time Witch-recommended savings provider that's backed by over 150 years of Goldman Sachs expertise. Open your Marcus cash ISA at marcus.co.uk. Time's ticking. Interest rate is 4.01% AER, 3.94% tax-free variable, includes a bonus rate of 0.74% tax-free fixed for the first 12 months. Rate correct as of 5th of March 26.
At Pets in a Pickle, we know your furry friends get up to all kinds of mischief. Like when the dog scuffed that entire chocolate cake. Or the time the cat tested his 9 lives from the curtain rail. Again. That's why we're here when it matters most, with fuss-free pet insurance policies, including unlimited video call access with First Vet. for pet insurance policies as unique as they are. Visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Donations to British Heart Foundation fund scientific research that can help save lives. People like Joe, who's pitching his next big business plan. Maria, who's sending out her wedding invitations. And Jack, who's just being a teenager again. Because when you donate, you fund more than just science. You help save lives. British Heart Foundation funds research that aims to cure inherited heart muscle diseases. But our work is not done. Donate now at bhf.org.uk and keep us beating.
Wide.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
7:34, we'll talk more about the Mandelson fires, the reputational damage, of course, to the Prime Minister, and we're hearing from one of his senior colleagues later in this hour. But let's talk oil prices, and confused you probably should be, because President Trump is telling us that the prices are coming down. We've just heard from a correspondent who's looking out on the Strait of Hormuz, which paints it, who paints a different picture. So what is the reality? Christian May, Editor-in-Chief at CityM, joins us now. What is the truth as regards oil prices, Christian? Morning to you.
Good morning, Nick. The truth, as I watch the price of a barrel of Brent crude on the screen in front of me right now, is that having shot up to $100 a barrel a few hours ago, it's ticking down a little bit. It's just gone to about $96, still up on yesterday, and certainly up since there was a relief in the oil price following Donald Trump's declaration that the war was basically over. Now, you and I have been discussing this all week, and I'm not an oil trader, but it struck me as optimistic when those oil prices slumped off the back of Donald Trump's rhetoric. And indeed, we spoke to plenty of City analysts who said Donald Trump was just telling the market what the market wanted to hear. In addition to that, yesterday the International Energy Agency authorised the biggest ever release of oil from strategic reserves. Now, that action was kind of priced in, it was expected, but nevertheless, the oil price rose on the back of that decision, which means that perhaps it was taken in some quarters as a sign of panic rather than of reassurance. Specifically, the spike we saw to $100 in the last few hours or overnight was largely down to the fact that we saw at least two tankers carrying Iraqi fuel struck last night in the Gulf. 38 people rescued, I think one dead. Iraqi oil ports have completely stopped their operations following the attacks. And indeed, Iran continues to vow extensive activity against oil infrastructure in the region and indeed in those critical straits of Hormuz. So there were some very specific reasons that sent the oil price sky high again overnight. But there's a broader reason, which is that nobody knows how this is going to end. We understand that the government here is wargaming scenarios of a sustained $130 oil price and the consequences for that. Consequences are already being felt and seen, and they could be felt much more emphatically in the months ahead as inflation rears its head once again, with consequences for interest rates as well. The Chancellor yesterday saying that they do have scope to do something if necessary regarding relieving the pressure on households and consumers. It won't be at the scale that we saw at the height of the 2022 energy crisis, but the government says that they are in a stronger place than we were then. But, well, we shall see, won't we?
Pressure on oil, pressure on mortgages as well. What's caused those to tick up, Christian?
Yeah, the mortgage market is incredibly sensitive, and it preempts. It doesn't just react. So expectations now that the Bank of England will not be cutting interest rates again, some expectation that they may in fact have to raise them, which means that the average mortgage rate in the UK have just gone past 5%. And about 500 mortgage deals that were below that rate were pulled in the last 48 hours. That's the biggest upheaval in the market since the aftermath of Liz Truss's disastrous mini-budget. Now, it's not on a comparable scale, but it is the biggest since then. HSBC, Nationwide, Halifax, Barclays are already pushing through higher rates. You've got to bear in mind that well over a million people are going to have to remortgage this year as their fixed term comes to an end. And they might find themselves remortgaging at a higher rate than the one that they've managed to secure. So there will be a lot of nerves in the housing market, in the mortgage market as well. People are going to have to adapt to this new period of volatility.
We heard you tell us before the news that Revolut now gets a license. What does that actually mean? How long have they been waiting?
People might have assumed the Revolut was a bank because it sort of looked like a bank and talked like a bank.
It feels like
but
a
it
bank.
Did, felt like a bank, but it did not quack like a bank because it's, although it was a fintech giant, and there's no denying that, achieving its valuation of $75 billion with tens of millions of customers, about 13 million in the UK, they didn't have their full banking license, which meant they couldn't lend money. No loans, they couldn't enter the mortgage market, those sorts of things, which were absolutely the jewel in the crown. And that authorization came through yesterday evening after a four-year wait, one of the most complicated and longest regulatory routes to get a banking license in the regulator's history. It now means that Revolut can open up into lending money to customers. The mortgage market is worth an absolute fortune. The sky's the limit. This is such a successful story, I have to say. It's a great British tech success story, no doubt about it. Taken a decade, there's now a mega new bank, which is absolutely biting at the heels of the big high street players. And let me just end on this observation, Nick, just to show you the scale of quite what this sort of company has been doing. One City venture capital firm who put in £1 million investment 10 years ago has seen that stake increase to north of $2 billion. So don't we all wish that we'd jumped in early? But congratulations to Revolut. They are now formally a bank.
How lovely to finish on a positive story in your often difficult world. Christian May, thank you. Your editor-in-chief at City AM. Same time tomorrow, 7:40 the time. Now David's in South Woodford to talk about oil prices. David, your take on that. The president says the prices are coming down. Well, they are a little bit, but they were $76 a barrel before the intervention in Iran. Good morning.
Morning, Nick. I don't think they're going to be coming down unless there's some political settlement. Reuters today reported that they sourced three different American sources saying that the Iranian regime is very much intact and not at risk of collapse anytime soon. And the Iranian regime have made it clear they decide when it ends, not America. Number two, the Wall Street Journal today actually confirmed that the American naval officers have confirmed that they have not been told by Trump or any of the politicians in America to have Navy escorts because it's too risky and it will create a kill box for both naval vessels and commercial vessels. Mm-hmm. So Iran is totally controlling what they said they would. They're controlling the geography, who to hit, when. And they also blocked up the Strait of Hormuz.
How do you see this ending, David, lastly?
I think the only way to end, the GCC countries, the Arab countries, will have to get involved, appease Iran, offer them money to rebuild, and get assurances from Trump that there'll be no more attacks. And then Iran needs to agree, which the, according to the Omanian ambassador, foreign officer, because Oman was hosting these talks when America attacked, needs to go back to the negotiating table and get Iran to agree not to enrich and stockpile.
Thanks for all your input and your forecast and accurate summation as you see it. Be like David. Get it off your chest. Get it on the radio. Give me a call on that number, 741. Let's go to other stories. And a 16-year-old boy has been arrested on suspicion of causing grievous bodily harm, or GBH as it is known, with intent after a teenage girl was stabbed at a school close to Norwich. Shivani Sharma is LBC's East of England reporter, joins us with the full details. Shivani, morning.
Nick, good morning. It was every parent's worst nightmare yesterday morning as Thorpe St Andrew School, the largest secondary school in Norfolk with over 1,800 pupils, went into lockdown. Children hid under tables. They were told not to go on their phones. Blinds were shut, doors were barricaded, and the school alarm rang across the site after a teenage girl was stabbed. Emergency services were called shortly after 10 a.m. and a heavy presence of paramedics, police officers and forensic vans followed soon after. Now, we understand the girl sustained minor injuries. She was taken to hospital and a 15-year-old white British boy was arrested on suspicion of grievous bodily harm with intent. And as pupils hid under tables, some of them took photographs which were circulated on social media of armed police officers entering the school in full protective gear. Some children sent panicked messages to their parents saying that they were scared and that they were hiding. And there was about a two-hour period where around 150 parents turned up outside the school gates and they felt left in the dark, desperately trying to find out what was going on and where their children were. Now, once the police got on top of the situation, pupils rushed out to their parents and the school closed for the afternoon. Norfolk Police has said they don't believe that the incident yesterday is in any way connected to an anti-Semitic hate crime, which was reported at the same school on Thursday last week. The school, as we understand it, Nick, is open today. In a letter to parents yesterday evening, the head said she understands, though, if parents do want to keep their children at home today, but that when something like this happens, routines and normality are helpful. Officers have said they'll have an increased presence around the school today and in the coming days as a source of reassurance for parents and pupils alike who are understandably extremely shaken by what happened yesterday morning.
LBC's Shivani Sharma reporting. Let's pick up on what you're saying on social media, texts, emails coming in concerning the appointment of Peter Mandelson and what we now know. Nick in Gillingham, I believe Mandelson was given the job because Starmer knew him and Trump had a connection through the friend of Jeffrey Epstein. He didn't need security checks. They all mix in the same slippery circles. It's ridiculous to think he didn't know roughly what he was. It wasn't poor judgment. He got caught and he was caught. Okay, this comes in from Andrew. Morgan McSweeney said it was fine, so Starmer agreed. Why was McSweeney so desperate to appoint Mandelson? Could Mandelson have helped raise the money for Labour Together? Remember, that was an organisation that came in the spotlight for a while. And lastly, this comes from, Mike and Crawley. Jobs for the boys. US Ambassador for Mandelson, Foreign Secretary, and a Lordship for David Cameron. Both appointments unexpected and from outfield. One cannot be suspicious that mutual backslapping trumps, no pun intended, says Mike, integrity. Do keep them coming. Later in the show,
ISIS are telling their followers to target the World Cup this summer for mass casualty terror attacks. I'm crime correspondent Andy Hughes with the exclusive.
Yes, that chilling exclusive on LBC still to come. 7:45 LBC News headlines now. Dominic Ellis.
The Prime Minister is facing renewed scrutiny over his decision to appoint Peter Mandelson as ambassador to Washington. Oil prices have risen again as Iran intensifies attacks on ships in the Gulf. And MPs are going to examine the fairness of student loan repayments. LBC weather. Windy with some heavy rain spreading across northern areas of the UK. Patchy rain and sunny spells in the southeast. A high of 14 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. On the trains, Great Western Railway services aren't running between Marlow and Bourne End. It's because of a track problem. On the Underground, there are severe delays on the Northern Line and minor delays on the Bakerloo and Victoria lines. One lane is closed on the M23 southbound just before the M25 junction. That's following an accident. And then also on the M23, there are queues southbound to Junction 10 at Crawley, and that's where a lorry's broken down. Problems now on the M4 westbound just after Junction 8-9 at Maidenhead. A car's broken down here, so there are queues on the approach. Very busy in Blackheath on the A2 Shooters Hill Road. There are westbound queues of about 15 minutes. This is heading from Blackheath Common up to Deptford Bridge.
This is LBC.
Left it late for Mother's Day. Don't worry, Moonpig's got ya. Because there's Mother's Day cards, and then there's Moonpig Mother's Day cards.
Aww.
You can add stickers, her favourite photos, even a message in your very own handwriting. Get it there with next day delivery. So there's no faff, no panic, and you'll still be the favourite. Plus, get 20% off when you use code MUM20. Because this Mother's Day, everyone deserves a
Moonpig.com.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060 973, LBC.
A Thameslink train is a place where family moments become more peaceful. Where you can spread out and a game of I Spy gets a scenic upgrade with snacks, stories and the occasional sheep for a bonus point. Less stress, more yes with kids tickets for £2 at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper, to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato, and spicy smoked paprika and chili.
Woo-hoo!
Try Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces with serious flavor. Dolmio, yeah.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curve leg, flared, straight or skinny.
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of.
Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. They will affect how you manage your tenancies. Act now. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
Sorry to interrupt your day, but I've just been diagnosed with dementia, and I'm going to need your help. I'll need help when I can no longer button a shirt or recognise my own family. My daughter will need help too. I worry this could ruin her life. And we will all need help to find a cure to end the devastation of dementia. I can't do this alone.
It will take a society to beat dementia. Alzheimer's Society.
How does a $20 golf gadget end up being used as a bomb detector in war zones worldwide? I'm Alice Levine, and this is Explosive Lies, the podcast exposing a scam that fooled governments and security services across the globe. Open our free Global Player app and search Explosive Lies to start listening today.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
7:49. Let's come back to our conversation concerning the appointment of Lord Mandelson. We'll be talking about recently whether it was in an attempt to try and get close to those troubling times in Washington, and was it a bit of a gamble that backfired? We'll look into that more detail and talk about the Prime Minister's position. But if you think as a result of that, that the idea of ethics and integrity in and around Westminster needs some kind of review, you're not alone. The government seems to agree with you, and they're putting in measures to try and bring that about. And let's turn to a government minister now, Paymaster General, Minister for European Union Relations, Nick Thomas-Symonds, who joins me now. In the light of what we've been witnessing over the last 24 hours or so, what measures are being taken? Good morning to you, Minister.
Good morning, Nick. And look, it's always good, Nick, to join you,
good to have you on
your show. Look, in terms of measures that need to be taken, you're absolutely right that we do need to look at this. So first of all, on a specific around the vetting process for ambassadorial appointments, whether they are political appointments, as Peter Mandelson was, and in terms of diplomats, I think, first of all, we've got to make absolutely sure that the vetting process is fully complete before that political appointment is made. I think that's really important when we look at the documents that we've seen and the fact that there was still, and I don't want to get into the complications of it, Nick, but basically what's called a strap clearance is high-level security clearance. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the documents, it wasn't completed at the point that the post was taken up by Peter Mandelson last February. So I think it's really important we do that. Then in terms of lobbying transparency, I was actually the minister who signed off the Ethics and Integrity Commission last October. And we've also given the Prime Minister's ethics advisor powers to initiate investigations of his own without being asked by the Prime Minister. But we're also now looking at things like, is transparency sufficient? Are the measures we have in place to publish ministers' financial interests sufficient? Or do we need to go further? So we will be now, in pretty short order over the next few months, looking at those, seeing if we can raise standards on those as well. And I would say, Nick, more generally, this is because this has happened regarding Peter Mandelson, and it's important we're not simply just moving on, that we're actually learning the lessons, and the Prime Minister is leading that change going forward.
How did he ever get the job?
Prime Minister has said that he made a mistake, that he deeply regrets the time that Mandelson spent as the ambassador to the United States. The Prime Minister has taken responsibility and, most importantly, has apologised to Epstein's victims, who every time this matter returns to our public debate are re-traumatised by having to
I'm sorry, he apologises to the victims, yet he appointed someone to this high office who he knew retained close links with the most infamous paedophile on the planet. How on earth can you, in the same breath, say he apologised to the victims? He enhanced the role of someone who stayed in the apartment of that paedophile when he was in jail. He appointed someone who had close links with Ghislaine Maxwell, who was in jail for working, trafficking with that paedophile. Don't give me this idea that the sympathies are there. Show some evidence, Minister.
So, first of all, you're right that the document that you're referring to, the Cabinet Office due diligence document, says that Mandelson reportedly stayed in Epstein's house. It also contains there a quote by from Lord Mandelson's spokesperson talking about the nature of the relationship. Now, what the Prime Minister then did was had questions put to Peter Mandelson. Now, I can't...
And who put those questions, Minister?
I can't allow...
That would be one of his one of Mandelson's closest friends, Matthew, now Lord Doyle.
I'm treading very...
That would be like me speaking to my wife about something, in a sense, wouldn't it? What's the point?
I don't... Look, I'm treading really carefully here, because you will know the Metropolitan Police has asked us not
Everything we're talking about, Minister, is in the public domain. I wish it wasn't you today, because I like you and you're a decent bloke. This is a shameful, this is a shambles, and it comes back to one person. That one person is the Prime Minister, who wasn't warned once, wasn't warned twice. He had four separate warnings. You talk about beefing up the process. The process is already in position, and the Prime Minister chose to ignore it. That is the harsh reality that you are trying to defend, and I wish it wasn't you, Minister.
No, Nick, the document isn't before us, which is the answers to questions that were put. The reason I'm just treading carefully about speaking about that document is we've had a request from the Metropolitan Police not to release the document. And the reason for that is, as you know, there is a criminal investigation going on to Peter Mandelson, a wider criminal investigation going on to the whole of this vile Epstein set of crimes as well. I don't want to be saying anything, nor I'm sure would anyone else, that would mean that as a consequence of that, someone further down the line, can't take that investigation forward, someone can't face justice. So that's why I'm in a difficult position, as I'm sure you'd understand answering this question. That's why I'm treading carefully.
But do you think due process was followed, Minister?
I think there are serious questions about this process. There's two elements to this, just to be clear. There's the due diligence bit, where we've got, as I say, the missing document. We've then got the vetting process, where I think there are questions there to be answered in terms of, as I say, the point at which it was completed, the order at which it took place. We are absolutely looking at that. We've already changed it, so you have to complete it before the appointment is taken up. But yes, in terms of looking at this process, absolutely.
Right. So you agree that there is concern over the process, yet the Prime Minister told the House in September that full due process had been followed. It hadn't. We now learn that it was, quotes, weirdly rushed, and he'd had four warnings, including a briefing note in which he was told that Lord Mandelson was president of a firm called Global Council, which had failed to disclose associations with the Qatari Free Zone Authority. This is not due process. This is cooking the books.
So all the steps you would expect in terms of a Cabinet Office due diligence process and the various stages of the vetting process. So that is, just to be clear, there's something called developed vetting, which is it's a very intrusive process, but it's a very important part of the process for appointing people to high public office. And what's called the STRAP process, which is a very high level of clearance. So all the steps are all there, Nick. The steps have all happened. But the point then is, the completion of them at the point that Mandelson takes up the post. And frankly as well, as the Prime Minister has set out, what he then finds out when you have Bloomberg and then the US Department of Justice disclosures in September of last year, when the Prime Minister then, finding out that information, immediately moves to dismiss Lord Mandelson.
So he relies on Bloomberg, do we? We rely on a news agency.
Well, we shouldn't be.
You do. You just said it was Bloomberg. They helped bring this about, and the Daily Telegraph. What does that say to the government?
Well, what it says to me is that we have to, exactly as we are doing, go back and look through this whole process as to how it works, not just in terms of learning the lesson on Peter Mandelson, but more generally, and that is precisely the work the Prime Minister is leading.
But can I say, and you'll have studied this as well, Minister, Jonathan Powell, the National Security Advisor, says it was weirdly rushed. Sir Philip Barton, the former Permanent Secretary of the Foreign Office, raised reservations. Dame Karen Pearce, the outgoing ambassador, repeatedly flagged the Epstein risk. And I've mentioned already that Global Council was already under investigation. Four warnings, yet Sir Keir's not man enough to come out and give a statement. He sends folk like you, senior colleagues like you. Why is he frit?
Well, to be fair, he has come out very directly on this on a number of occasions, Nick, and has taken...
We haven't heard from him since we know he ignored four warnings.
Well, look, you obviously will. I mean, the media will. The Prime Minister is out frequently, and I'm sure you will. But he has spoken about this in public on many, many occasions. Right. But he's also taken responsibility, accepted...
Of course he has. It's his fault.
And, well, yeah, politicians don't always...
He can't blame Larry the Cat, can he?
Well, politicians over the years, I'm sure you've...
Well, let me ask you this. Lastly, before becoming a minister and a politician, if I've got my research right, before being called to the bar, you were a tutor at Oxford. Had it been found out that you had misled Oxford University prior to your appointment, would you have expected a payout?
Well, it depends, doesn't it, for this reason. I think...
Well, this is interesting. What might it depend on, Minister?
Right, let me just explain what this... Because I share the moral outrage, Nick, that I'm sure you feel and your listeners...
It's my listeners who are absolutely spitting chips, Nick.
100%. And I understand exactly why, from a moral point of view, that is the case. On a numbers basis, you can see why this decision is made. Let me just say why. God. Employment tribunals are what are called cost neutral. In other words, you can win an employment tribunal, but you still will not, in ordinary circumstances, usually recover your legal costs. You can see why, on a numbers basis, you have someone who is claiming £547,000, the documents show us, threatening to go to a tribunal, have a dispute, is negotiated down to £75,000. You can see why, from a numbers point, taking legal advice, the decision was made. But I share your listeners' outrage about this, that money is still being held by Peter Mandelson. The decent thing to do would be to give it to charity. Perhaps, may I gently suggest, a charity that supports victims.
Or give it back to the taxpayer. We funded it.
Well, or give it back to the taxpayer, indeed. Yes.
Lastly, almost the crowning point here, why was Lord Mandelson allowed to stay in Washington for an extra 2 weeks for the sake of his dog, Jock?
Well, first I learned about that, obviously, was in these papers.
This is astounding. This is like LBC finding out that I completely misled them at the point at which they hired me. I brought the company into disrepute, but they allow me to stay on air for 2 weeks because my cat's not very well.
Well, look, I take it entirely the point you're making. I think the point I would just also make, though, is there is... Look, Peter Mandelson in that role, the political appointment, it isn't like a minister where the Prime Minister can literally just dismiss them, they leave office, that's it. Right. He was there actually employed as a senior civil servant. So it was slightly different, you know, in terms of the treatment that you would receive when you are dismissed. And I think that's probably the logic behind what's happened there.
I look forward to speaking to you on better terms for you and your brief as Paymaster General and Minister for European Union Relations, Nick Thomas Simmons. Thank you for your time and well done for your valiant defence. Let's see what the listeners make of it. Again, thank you to that. 8 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock. Sir Keir Starmer is facing renewed scrutiny over his decision to appoint Peter Mandelson as ambassador to Washington. The first tranche of files into the vetting process were released yesterday. It shows the Prime Minister was warned of a general reputational risk over the peer's links to Jeffrey Epstein. Former Conservative leader Sir Ian Duncan-Smith has told Nick he thinks Sir Keir may have misled Parliament.
As this opens up, and there's more to come, I think, it shows categorically that Starmer knew what he was doing when he came to the House and said on the 10th of September that due process was followed. It wasn't followed in the end of the day, and so there is a charge now of misleading, lying to the House of Commons at the time, because he knew more, and he should have said that when he was standing in front of members of Parliament.
The Paymaster General, Nick Thomas Simmons, had just spoken to Nick. He admitted that due diligence fell short.
I think there are serious questions about this process. There's two elements to this, just to be clear. There's the due diligence bit, where we've got, as I say, the missing document. We've then got the vetting process, where I think there are questions there to be answered in terms of, as I say, the point at which it was completed, the order at which it took place. We are absolutely looking at that. We've already changed it, so you have to complete it before the appointment is taken up.
Peter Mandelson denies any wrongdoing in relation to Jeffrey Epstein. In other news this morning, oil prices have risen again despite the release of millions of barrels of emergency reserves in response to the war in the Middle East. Brent crude is currently trading at around $96 a barrel. Iranian attacks on ships in the Gulf have continued, with three more tankers targeted overnight. MPs are going to examine the fairness of student loan repayments. The Treasury Committee will look into growing concerns about Plan 2 loans in England and Wales. Tech firms are being urged to do more to protect children online, with regulators warning current safeguards are not strong enough. Ofcom and the Information Commissioner's Office have written to major platforms demanding tougher age checks. And Manchester City's chances of reaching the quarter-finals of the Champions League have taken a blow. They lost 3-0 to Real Madrid in the first leg of their last 16 tie last night. Arsenal were held to a 1-1 draw with Bayer Leverkusen. Chelsea were thrashed 5-2 by holders Paris Saint-Germain. In the city, the FTSE 100 just reopened at 10,535. It closed down 58 yesterday. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.15. LBC weather, windy with some heavy rain spreading southwards across northern areas of the UK. Some patchy rain and sunny spells in the southeast. A high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dom Manichelis.
Chase is the digital bank that gives you 1% cash back on groceries.
So, can I get cash back on cake mix?
Indeed.
And icing?
Yep.
And sprinkles?
Sure.
And candles?
Yeah, and you can turn all that cash back into a nice birthday treat.
How do you know it's my birthday?
Just a hunch. Get 1% cash back on groceries, fuel and everyday transport when you spend with Chase. Search Chase Bank. 18 plus UK residents. 1% cash back on this debit card spending for your first year. Maximum £15 per month. Eligibility and exceptions apply. May be changed or withdrawn.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning to you. 4 minutes after eight, Thursday, March the 12th. The next aspect of the Mandelson affair we'll examine is the reputational damage to Sir Keir Starmer. Supposedly this forensically skilled barrister, but duped, it would seem, or totally ignored not one, not two, not three, but four warnings about the appointment of Peter Mandelson. In other news, be careful, it could turn you blind. Peter is one of a growing number of people blaming weight loss jabs for the loss of his eyesight.
To my mind, it's the only thing that caused it. I wasn't asleep. I didn't have high blood pressure. So I don't think that it was a normal event.
In other news,
after a fire ripped through buildings near Glasgow Central Station, politicians are now demanding routine fire checks at vape shops. I'm LBC's Henry Riley, finding out about the potential risks of vapes with a fire safety expert.
You'll recall it was recently as Monday that we had Online Safety Day. Now Ofcom are to tell the tech firms, keep underage children off your platforms. You'll hear more on that later in this hour. And mind your language. English is increasingly under attack from Spanish as more and more people turn to Spanish songs and Spanish music, such as Berghain there by Rosalia from her new album, I know you've got all her early work, Lux, in which the singer sings in 13 different languages.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
13 languages, I struggle with one. Now, in the last 15 minutes of the show, the man put out on what's called the media round to defend what would appear to be the indefensible was Paymaster General Nick Thomas Simmons. Actually, not a bad bloke. But I started by asking him, how did Mandelson ever get the job?
Prime Minister has said that he made a mistake, that he deeply regrets the time that Mandelson spent as the ambassador to the United States. The Prime Minister's taken responsibility and most importantly, has apologised to Epstein's victims, who every time this matter returns to our public debate are re-traumatised by having to relive.
I'm sorry, he apologises to the victims, yet he appointed someone to this high office who he knew retained close links with the most infamous paedophile on the planet. How on earth can you, in the same breath, say he apologised to the victims? He enhanced the role of someone who stayed in the apartment of that paedophile when he was in jail. He appointed someone who had close links with Ghislaine Maxwell, who was in jail for working, trafficking with that paedophile. Don't give me this idea that the sympathies are there. Show some evidence, Minister.
So, first of all, you're right that the document that you're referring to, the Cabinet Office due diligence document, says that Mandelson reportedly stayed in Epstein's house. It also contains there a quote by from Lord Mandelson's spokesperson talking about the nature of the relationship. Now, what the Prime Minister then did was had questions put to Peter Mandelson. Now, I can't...
And who put those questions, Minister?
I can't...
That would be one of Mandelson's closest friends, Matthew, now Lord Doyle.
I'm treading very...
That would be like me speaking to my wife about something, in a sense, wouldn't it? What's the point?
I'm treading really carefully here because you will know the Metropolitan Police has asked us not
everything
to
we're talking repeat. About, Minister, is in the public domain. I wish it wasn't you today, because I like you and you're a decent bloke. This is a shameful, this is a shambles, and it comes back to one person. That one person is the Prime Minister, who wasn't warned once, wasn't warned twice. He had four separate warnings. You talk about beefing up the process. The process is already in position, and the Prime Minister chose to ignore it. That is the harsh reality that you are trying to defend, and I wish it wasn't you, Minister.
No, Nick, the document isn't before us, which is the answers to questions that were put. The reason I'm just treading carefully about speaking about that document is we've had a request from the Metropolitan Police not to release the document.
What now for the PM? Let's turn to Andrew Neil, businessman, journalist, broadcaster, columnist for the Daily Mail. What happens next for Sir Keir Starmer? What have you learnt about the administration over the past 24 hours, Andrew? Morning.
Good morning. What I've learned is that Keir Starmer's defence that he was misled, lied to by Peter Mandelson, is now lying in shreds. It's a shambles. It doesn't matter what Peter Mandelson said to him. The due diligence report produced by the Prime Minister's own officials give ample reason, not just with Epstein, but with his attitudes to China, to Russia, his lobbying group, the potential for serious conflicts of interest with the clients that he represented. All of that made him unfit to be our ambassador in Washington, regardless of what he then told the Prime Minister. The evidence not to appoint him was there, and the only conclusion you can draw is that Keir Starmer and a couple of those around him were determined to make him our ambassador, regardless of what they were being told or what they found out.
Does he, Sir Keir, survive, Andrew?
Well, he is a survivor, I'll give him that. He's helped by the fact that the news cycle is dominated at the moment by rather more important events, even than Peter Mandelson and who our ambassador is in Washington, or even more important than the appalling behaviour of someone like Jeffrey Epstein. But it's another nail in the coffin. We've had a previous attempt. He came very close to losing his job. The Gorton by-election was a disaster. This is now a disaster, and more has to come out. This is, I'm just listening to the minister there talking to you, hiding behind the Metropolitan Police. I mean, that's outrageous. And the Metropolitan Police, you don't have to do what they say on this matter. You could publish these documents saying, we overrule the Metropolitan Police, it's in the national interest. But no, they're hiding behind the police. May the 7th is going to be a disaster for the government, and more documents will come out that also show when we get the answers to these questions that Mandelson was asked about his links, we will discover that the only people involved in this appointment process were people who wanted Mandelson to be ambassador in the first place. McSweeney, the chief of staff, Doyle, the communications director, Starmer himself. And so when Labour MPs come to look at in the ruins of May the 7th, this will play big in the decision they take about their Prime Minister.
Lastly, a word on Mandelson, if we can. You were a long-serving and award-winning editor of the Sunday Times. You chaired The Spectator. I imagine you met Mandelson on a number of occasions, or certainly had contact with him. What do you think of him as a bloke, Andrew?
Well, I have met Mandelson several times, many times, actually. I had dinner with him now, but I think just before the pandemic. We went to the theatre together. My godson was performing there. Mandelson, one of the reasons they wanted him, he's a highly effective government minister. He's highly effective as ambassador. He is a cut above the normal minister. He was really admired by the civil servants of the business department when he was sent back to be business secretary. But he's also a deeply flawed and dodgy character. And he's got previous, and it was obvious that was the case. And every time you give him the benefit of the doubt, you live to regret it. And that was the lesson Starmer should have taken, but he refused to do it. And he now, like all people who put their faith in Peter Mandelson, they end up living with the consequences of it and deeply regretting it.
Always good speaking with you, Andrew. Thank you. Andrew Neil, journalist, broadcaster, columnist for the Daily Mail, former editor, of course, of the Sunday Times, who mixed in circles occasionally with Lord Mandelson. Let's turn at 12 after 8 to Kevin Craik, founder and chief executive of the public relations agency PLMR, and sort of as a Labour candidate in the most recent general election. Can I ask you where you think this leaves Sir Keir Starmer? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I think it leaves him still in the middle of a very unhelpful issue. I think you, this morning, I thought you said something earlier, I thought that summed up why this happened. And you said it was a gamble. Yeah. Extraordinary times in the United States. And ultimately, the Prime Minister has apologised for this appointment. He's had to eat a large dose of humble pie. He's come to the Parliamentary Labour Party. He's apologised. And we're not finished with this yet because there are documents that are still, as you just heard with Andrew, not been released. I don't think, and I've tried to say this, Nick, not through the prism of a Labour Party supporter and a supporter of Keir Starmer and Rachel Reeves, both of whom I've dealt with, but big picture-wise, a reasonable voter will say, he said sorry. He's released a record number of bits of information. Nothing is being hidden. And I think in due course, the people will say, he's not trying to make money. He's not bent. He did make a mistake. He did make a mistake. But is this something that you lose a prime minister over? I think a fair-minded person will say no. But am I saying, Nick, it hasn't been a total mess? Of course it has.
Even with the £75,000 payment, Kevin.
Oh, don't get me started on that, Nick.
That's where a lot of people are really spitting ships, use that expression again.
Well, spitting ships is a brilliant phrase from you at this time of the morning, but can you... I think I was outraged, really, and again, I've dealt with Peter Manson over the years, but how dare you? How dare you put a claim in for over £500,000, you know, when you're already a multimillionaire? And again, you've discussed this very eruditely this morning, but I'm in business. I've had to let people go in the past and settle legal claims. I can see why the government did what they did, but does it really pee people off? My God, it does, you know, and that's unhelpful. But there are two sides to that, and you had a very good lawyer on this morning articulating why sometimes it's better to settle. But it's outrageous. And again, you look at Manson. How dare you ask for that money, mate? There's no Labour values in that.
Grateful for your time, Kevin Craig, your founder and chief executive of the public relations agency, PLMR. You stood as a Labour candidate in the last general election. Come into your reactions on that. Manar, you will be the first caller. And later in the hour,
ISIS are telling their followers to target the World Cup this summer for mass casualty terror attacks. I'm crime correspondent Andy Hughes with the exclusive.
Yes, a truly chilling story. And you'll hear more from Andy on that after this news. 8:15 LBC News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
A cabinet office minister has admitted to Nick there are serious questions to answer regarding the process which saw the appointment of Peter Mandelson as US ambassador. Oil prices have risen again as Iran intensifies attacks on ships in the Gulf. And MPs will assess whether student loans are fair to graduates as part of an inquiry into the system. LBC weather, windy with some heavy rain spreading across northern areas of the UK. Patchy rain and sunny spells in the southeast, a high of 14 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. On the Underground, there are severe delays on the Northern Line and minor delays on the Victoria and Bakerloo. On the train, still no Great Western Railway running between Marlow and Bourne End because of the track problem. And Greater Anglia services are delayed by about 15 minutes between Stratford and Shenfield after an investigation from earlier. In Farnborough, it's very busy on the A232 Croydon Road in both directions. And that was after an accident. Everything's open, but it's still very slow. In Ilford, South Park Drive is closed in both directions at Staines Road, and that's following an accident. All the buses that usually go that way are on diversion. And still very slow on the M23 southbound to Junction 10 at Crawley, a lorry's broken down.
This is LBC.
It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under.
Get that Toyota electric feeling with the all-new, all-electric Toyota Urban Cruiser. Available with 0% APR representative and £1,500 deposit contribution. And save £1,500 with the Toyota Electrified Saving. Visit your nearest Toyota centre. Price from £299.95. Available on Toyota PCP when financed through Toyota Financial Services by 30th of June 2026. Optional final payment. Indemnities may be required. See website conditions apply.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
Have you lost money to an investment, crypto platform or trading app that seemed genuine at first? Has your bank refused your claim or only refunded part of your loss? At Keylaw, we specialise in the recovery of funds lost to investment fraud. Find out in minutes whether you may have a case at keylaw.co.uk. Expert legal guidance made simple. Keylaw is authorised and regulated by the SRA. You can complain to your bank or the Financial Ombudsman for free. T's and C's apply.
My name's Mark, and this is my NHS story. The sensation in my neck was painful all the time. Once I spoke to my GP, they referred me to my CDC. They got me in very, very quickly. The amount of pain I went through for something so easy, why hadn't I done this 4 months before?
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
At AJ Bell, we believe investing is for everyone, even people who know nothing about investing. Like Keith, who thought dividends were a boy band. Jessica, who thought compound interest was a prison dating app. And Sue. Sue thought FTSE 100 was a bit of under-the-table fun, which surprised her accountant.
Oh, no.
If we can make investing feel good for them, it's no wonder which have recommended us 7 years running. AJ Bell. Feel good. Investing. The value of your investments can go up or down.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
19 minutes after 8, let's get to your reaction on the Mandelson affair, what it says of Sir Keir Starmer. Well, Stephen Milton Keynes, I mean, he absolutely nails it, Steve, brilliant. This is the former leading prosecutor in the country. On the appointment of Mandelson, he totally ignored all the evidence given to him and instead asked the accused if all is well. Unbelievable. Not just poor judgment, utter incompetence. Manar in Brighton, how do you rate it? Manar, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. When the Prime Minister heard the name Epstein, he should have just stayed away, period. He's just sorry that he's been found out. He showed total disregard to all the victims when he went ahead. So if the other files about Epstein hadn't come out, he wouldn't have come to apologise. It was total disregard.
Let me ask you this. By the way, I agree with all what you say, but it was a gamble because these are extraordinary times in Washington. You're going to have to appoint someone with an extraordinary skill set to work alongside and to get deals out of Trump. So, was that at least the risk worth taking? Because one thing Mandelson has, and whoever you talk to about Mandelson, he is supremely skilled in the ways of a courtier.
Not at all. After all the warnings, no. No, I'm sure there's somebody who is very close to that ranking that could have done the same job. No.
Not at all.
There is no excuse whatsoever.
Where does it leave Sir Keir lastly, Mané, in your view?
I think he should leave. What's he doing? Still saying sorry that he's been found out. He's sorry that he's been found out, but not sorry for making that decision, for showing total disregard to everybody else, to all the victims.
No. Yes, I mean, this line from the minister, think of the victims, that's just palpable, that's risible nonsense, because how are you thinking of the victims appointing someone who was so close to the best-known infamous paedophile on the planet? Manar, thank you. John, you'll be the next caller. Now to a story I've mentioned on a couple of occasions, and if you're a football fan, it'll send a chill, won't it? ISIS is encouraging followers to target the FIFA World Cup in 2026, held in the US for mass casualty terror attacks. LBC's crime correspondent Andy Hughes has the exclusive report and is in the studio with me now. Andy, good morning. What you got?
Good morning, Nick. Yeah, so in just 3 months' time, basically to the day, tens of thousands of British football fans will be travelling to US, Canada and Mexico for the world's most popular sports tournament. ISIS, believe it or not, publishes a monthly magazine which sets out its priorities for attacking the West. And LBC has discovered, has named this summer's World Cup as one of its main targets. Pictures of stadiums in the US have appeared online and include the instructions, kill them all, while encouraging lone wolf attacks in large crowds. The UK's former head of counter-terrorism policing, Neil Basu, tells me this is something the security services, both here and in the US, have been preparing for.
It's straight out of the ISIS playbook. So they used to have, and I believe they still do, have a monthly magazine, effectively, which is available digitally and in hard copy, which effectively talks about methodology, who you should attack, how you should attack them, when you should attack them, and gives you tips and tricks for doing that. So there isn't any counterterrorism policing professional in the Western world that would not already have been preparing for that, even if they hadn't seen it.
Security sources have told me that this is not the first time that ISIS has targeted major sporting events. Back in 2018, the terror group unsuccessfully plotted an attack at the World Cup in Russia and in 2024 at the UEFA European Championships in Germany. It is a criminal offence to view or download material like this ISIS magazine, but
We have spoken to extremism experts whose job it is to monitor all of the terror group's propaganda. Dr. Charlotte Littlewood is a former Prevent officer.
Football has always been a target of ISIS. We saw adverts saying kill them all for the European Championships last year. And there's been targets against Ronaldo and Messi as well. Images of them with blood on their faces, really quite graphic images for the World Cup in 2018. So this is definitely a playbook and something that security services have to be very concerned about and very prepared for.
Now, this will clearly be concerning for the fans of England and Scotland planning to travel to the World Cup. And in things like these, Nick, the security services never directly comment on stuff like this for obvious reasons. But LBC understands that the security services both here and in the US are in constant communication about this and are fully prepared to deal with threats and keep fans safe during the tournament.
Andy Hughes with that exclusive report. Thank you. 8:24 is the time. We come back to our conversation then about where this leaves Lord Sir Keir Starmer in the wake of the Mandelson affair. John's in Notting Hill. John, your reaction and your view on this story. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Firstly, I love the show. I listen to you pretty much every day.
Oh, well, gosh, thank you very much.
But just every time this topic comes up, I'm always really surprised by the way that you describe Keir Starmer's decision to work with Mandelson, but you don't have any of the same kinds of comparisons with Keir Starmer working with Trump. The same things could be said for Mandelson as could be said for Trump. Of course, Trump is the American president, but we shouldn't be cozying up to someone who also had such close ties with Epstein. But why do you have the same criticisms for him when it comes to
Trump? Two things. Firstly, we don't appoint the United States president. Secondly, to my knowledge, correct me if I'm wrong, to my knowledge, President Trump has never stayed in Mandelson's apartment when Mandelson was in jail, and to my knowledge, hasn't got the relationship Mandelson had with Ghislaine Maxwell.
Well, we do know that Epstein has arranged parties at Mar-a-Lago with Trump.
Don't know that he's arranged parties. He's attended a party. I don't think he arranged it, did he?
In his own property, though. I mean, he was there and had some kind of involvement.
I mean, I've been at a drinks reception with Peter Mandelson, and I've shaken his hand, but I'm in no way involved with people. Now, I mean, I hear what you're saying, and clearly Donald Trump is closer than I am to Peter Mandelson, because I think I've met the man probably, I doubt, maybe four times in my entire life, but it's not on the same scale, not least because we don't appoint the President of the United States, we appoint our ambassador in Washington.
I wholly agree with you, but also we're talking about the fact that Mandelson isn't accused of any crimes in relation to the victims. Obviously, he's should be condemned for being associated with him.
Yes.
But that doesn't, having bad friends shouldn't be a crime. It shouldn't be a reason to lose a job. Loads of people have bad friends and associates.
Well, hold on, there's bad friends and there's paedophiles.
Of course, but we're not saying that Peter Mandelson is a paedophile,
are we? Not for a moment. But also the company of which he's president was failed to disclose certain business links. And this is a man who's lost ministerial posts not once, but twice. What was there, apart from his skills, as I say again, potential skills as a deal maker, what on earth recommended him for the job?
Well, I would say that the fact that he was close to Epstein and Trump and moved within those circles was specifically why he was given that job. And ultimately, for me, did Mandelson do a bad job as ambassador? Because that's the job he was given. Did he do a bad job?
I would have thought he probably did quite a good job in that initially the United Kingdom was able, and indeed Sir Keir went over to sign it, got a pretty good trade deal. So, yes, he did a good job, but I don't think that exonerates him, does it, John? What do you think?
It doesn't exonerate him, but what we're talking about is Keir Starmer being criticised for giving him the job. If he did a good job, we shouldn't really be criticising him for giving someone who did a good job.
That's where you and I are going to have to agree to differ, because the rap sheet is, for me, so grave, with such clear links to such an offender as Epstein, that I'm afraid that disqualifies you from doing the job for me.
Sorry, one more point as well, just before you let me go.
Yeah, of course.
You spoke to Andrew Neil, who talked about having dinner with Mandelson and going to the theatre with him because his son's show was there.
Yeah,
if Keir Starmer said anything close to that and hinted any kind of links like that with Mandelson, I don't think we would hear the end of it from you. But you just let Andrew go with him.
John, Andrew Neil didn't appoint Peter Mandelson to any position of power in the government.
No, he was close friends.
Hold on. You and I do not. Andrew Neil did not appoint him the salary that you and I pay, and £75,000 when it all went wrong because he misled the Prime Minister. Andrew Neil was then, I'm probably the editor, was a businessman. So he does have no decisions about spending our money on dodgy characters. And I'm sorry, Mandelson is a dodgy character. Go ahead.
This is where you and I do agree, though. I do agree the appointment of Mandelson was a complete misstep. But I don't think it's enough of a misstep for Keir Starmer to be called to go when Mandelson actually did a good job, in your own admission.
Yeah, I agree. He did do a good job. But he shouldn't, and I'm going to say he did, but he shouldn't have had the job in the first place. Because for me, his rap sheet, he wasn't a criminal, his rap sheet, as to use that expression, disqualified him. John, I enjoyed our conversations. Be well, thank you. Dell in Bournemouth says £3,000 for Ian Huntley, £40,000 for illegal migrants, £75,000 for Mandelson. We are being taken for mugs. Adam in Derby. Adam, your reaction. Good morning, you're on the radio.
Good morning, Nick. How are you?
Grand, thank you. Tell me what you want to say about this story, sir.
Yeah, it's just it's the 75,000 payout. It resonates with business owners at the moment massively because it's interesting. They're falling foul of their own policies. And the problem with that payout is when you heard the MP speak earlier, he said that it is cheaper to pay the 75,000 than it is to actually go through the process of fighting that argument. That is something that's happening to businesses every day.
To the point where
business owners are almost getting to the point of going, what is all this about? Is it worth it? It's really interesting.
And is that something that you experience personally? You run a company or you have run a company, have you?
Yeah, run a company, experienced it personally a couple of times through no fault of our own. I know somebody quite close to me who's going through it at the moment. And again, the advice that comes back is if they're going to fight it, you are better off to pay them out.
So what do you do? Just give them like 3 months or whatever and just hope they'll go away?
You try to, yeah, basically. Otherwise, it's going to cost you a lot of money to fight it. Also, in general, those offers are what's called without prejudice,
yes.
And they tend to be tax-free. So I would imagine that 75,000 is tax-free as well.
Who would run a business, Adam?
I don't know, to be honest with you. It's hard work.
Good luck with what you're doing, Adam. Thank you for your input. And speaking, again, use that expression. I think I've used it once, if not twice. It was the pragmatic view, but it's 75,000 of our money. I hear what you're saying, Adam. Thank you. This conversation will continue. And the possibility of another U-turn, a 15th U-turn on the way. The idea of this fuel duty hike.
Fuel duty is frozen. It's going to remain frozen until September. And we will keep the situation under review in light of what's happening in Iran.
But that 5p is going to make a heck of a difference, isn't it? Due in September. We'll look at that. Plus... well, it's got my team moving, I have to say. Mind your language. English is moving out to Spanish as more and more people are buying or downloading Spanish songs. That was Nueva Yol by Bad Bunny. Of course it was. All their work is sung in Spanish. Good old Bad Bunny. We'll have a rabbit about that later in the show. 8:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari on LBC. News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
Speaking to Nick, a Cabinet Office Minister has admitted there are serious questions regarding the process to appoint Peter Mandelson as US Ambassador. Files show the Prime Minister was warned of a general reputational risk over the peer's links to Jeffrey Epstein. Nick Thomas Simmons has told LBC that due diligence fell short, but changes are being made to the vetting process. Oil prices have risen again despite the release of millions of barrels of emergency reserves in response to the war in the Middle East. Iranian attacks on ships in the Gulf have continued, with three more tankers targeted overnight. And MPs are going to investigate the fairness of the student loan system. The Treasury Committee will examine the recent decision to freeze the repayment threshold for many graduates in England and Wales. LBC weather, windy with some heavy rain spreading across northern areas of the UK. Patchy rain and bright spells in the southeast, a high of 14 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Peter Mandelson was sacked because he was found to have lied during the appointment process. And yet, remarkably, the government saw fit to offer a £75,000 payout. I'm not sure that's going to wash. Why on earth would you need to pay them to sling their hook when they have clearly committed a sackable offence?
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Imagine winning the Euro Millions £14 million jackpot on Friday the 13th. Woo-hoo! Or even becoming one of our 13 guaranteed UK millionaires. You'd laugh in the face of luck. Friday the 13th will be lucky for some. Yeah!
EuroMillions from the National Lottery. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
At Kia, we know that inspiration begins with a first. Your first job, your first love, your first home. Now it's time for your first drive in the new Kia EV2 at our First Drive weekends. It's your chance to be one of the first to test drive the Kia EV2 with its innovative technology and elegant eye-catching design. It's small in size, but big in personality. Discover what driving electric really means. Search Kia First Drive weekends to reserve your place today.
Kia, movement that inspires.
My name is Karen, and this is my NHS story. You don't realise how blind you are until you have cataract surgery. I was referred to a surgical hub, and they booked us in for an operation. It was about 3 weeks before I was there. It's very, very quick.
The government is opening more surgical hubs, with more than 120 already operating across England, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
8:33. Back to the damage done by to Sir Keir Starmer by the Mandelson affair in a moment. Now, if anyone you love or know, or indeed are you on these weight loss jabs? Well, patients taking Wegovy, well, that's how I'm going to pronounce it anyway, have nearly five times the risk of sudden sight loss of those on Ozempic, a large scale study has found. Now, this is where we get into a bit of trouble. Glucagon-like peptide 1 receptor agonist, probably nowhere near, I do apologise, GLP-1RA medicines, such as semaglutide, sold as Wegovy, Ozempic and Rybelsus. Oh, my God. And tirzepatide. Is someone making this up? And tirzepatide, which is Mounjaro, help reduce blood sugar levels, slow digestion and reduce appetite. They've also been linked to reduced risks of heart attack, fewer drug overdoses and other health benefits. So what's not to like? Hang on a second. A study published in the British Journal of Ophthalmology found patients taking Wegovy for weight loss had a five-fold greater chance of developing non-arteritic anterior optic neurotherapy. That's enough from me. Let's get to someone who knows what the heck is going on. Naveed Sattar is a professor of cardiometabolic medicine at the University of Glasgow. I start with an apology. I won't pronounce any of those words right. Can you put in English, Professor, what is going on here and how grave do you think the risks are? Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. No, I thought you did reasonably well.
That's like my school reports. Reasonable.
They're difficult names, you know, to tirzepatide. This report that's come out does look alarmist, but it's not trial evidence, it's observational. So it comes with lots of caveats, and there are multiple other studies that do not suggest the risk is as high, and there are even some reports that do not confirm that there is a risk. So we're uncertain at this moment in time. What I would say is that if there is a risk, it's pretty rare. It's about probably 1 in 10,000 people. You'd have to be very unlucky if it was true, if the risk is genuinely there to develop this eye condition. Whereas, as you already nicely said, if you do take the drug, then these drugs, for the right reasons, you will lose considerable weight, and the drugs will, by losing weight and perhaps other ways, will protect your heart, your kidneys, your liver, reduce the risk of stroke, improve sleep apnea, reduce the risk of diabetes. So they have multiple benefits, and generally people feel better. So whilst this report is there, I would not be too alarmed. I don't think we'd absolutely know the truth about the overall effects on the eyes. There may be lots of good things that happens in the eyes as well, because remember, by reducing sugar and weight and blood pressure, you can actually protect many aspects of eye disease as well. So I think we need more data.
So let's come at this a different way. If you are carrying too much weight, obviously you're putting a strain on many of your organs, but you're also putting strain on your eyes, are you?
Well, diabetes. So you're putting strain on your eyes, but a number of weeks. So it's two common risk factors for eye disease and diabetes. Is one, sugar. Sugar, a high level, sticks to parts of molecules, particularly proteins, that then start to clog up small blood vessels supply the eyes. But also high blood pressure, because of its pressure, can put pressure on the eyes. But, you know, taking these medications means that if you don't have diabetes, you're much less likely to get diabetes. If you do have diabetes, your sugar control improves substantially. as does your blood pressure. I mean, there has been one thought that if you lower their sugar too quickly, it can cause the eye damage. Mm. We don't actually know if that's definitely true, and there are ongoing trials to confirm or refute that at the moment. So I would say at the moment, we don't absolutely know the truth about what the effects of these drugs are on eyes and a range of conditions in the eyes, and we need more evidence. But if there are risks, they're generally probably very rare, and that the benefits for the vast, vast majority outweigh the risks.
So final question, Professor. If someone close to you, a partner, a child, a sibling, whatever, said, hey, Professor, hey, Navid, I'm thinking of going on Wegovy or Mounjaro, would you say, oh, I don't know, or would you say, yep, the science is in, I'm totally relaxed? Professor?
Well, it depends on the individual circumstances for the individuals. I mean, I do clinical care, so I see patients, and we had exactly those discussions yesterday with patients who wanted to self-prescribe. And I think, you know, once I've got the records, I can see that there are no safety concerns. But I can also see if the patient has several conditions linked to obesity and they would want to feel much better and lose weight, then clearly they may have major benefits. So, you know, so it really depends on individual risks and benefits. And I think for the vast majority, with the right, you know, if it's within license, generally the benefits substantially outweigh the risk at this moment in time.
Grateful for your time. Thank you. Navid Sattar, Professor of Cardiometabolic Medicine at the University of Glasgow. I should need to credit this as an ITV News investigation. And they contacted Novo Nordisk, which manufacture some of the drugs, Ozempic and Wegovy. Wegovy, based in Denmark, and Novo Nordisk says patient safety is our top priority. We take any reports about adverse events from the use of our medicines very seriously. We work closely with authorities and regulatory bodies from around the world. Based on the totality of evidence, we concluded the data did not suggest a reasonable possibility of a causal relationship between semaglutide and the conditions that you report. And the benefit-risk profile of semaglutide remains favourable. 8:39. Where does it leave Sir Keir Starmer? The Mandelson scandal, Mandelson affair. John in Brighton. John, your reaction. Good morning.
I think Mandelson shouldn't give any money back. He should get all the money he's entitled to. He should get the full £500,000.
Well, that's an interesting view, and possibly rather a surprising one. You might be solitary here. Explain why.
They've employed him for the skills he's got. He's a skilled operator, political operator. They wanted him to deal with Trump. And that's
right, he's a close friend of a paedophile and sex trafficker as well.
Well, I mean, a lot of people knew Epstein. Lots of people.
Well, I'm sorry, to serve a position as our ambassador to Washington, I do believe that you have to have a fairly blemish-free track record. And we now know, although we knew all in advance anyway, that Peter Mandelson clearly didn't. Are you prepared to appoint anyone, then, if they get the job done?
Well,
I mean, are you suggesting to me that if he hadn't died at the weekend, Ian Huntley, had he done his time, we'd appoint him because he could be a deal-maker? Where does it end? Is there no crime in your book that prohibits you from going ahead in some key government or ambassadorial position?
Yeah, but we've got a bit of a strange president, haven't we, these days? So you need... Who would you have to deal with President Trump?
I don't know the candidates. I think, respectfully, that's a little unfair because the candidate profile isn't in front of me. I don't know who the runners and riders are.
Yeah, but I think we know Mandelson is a skilled, ruthless operator, and he wanted someone to deal with that in the circumstances we're in. That's right. So I think Mandelson should get... nothing's been proven against him. Lots of people knew Matt Epstein.
No. Well, no, absolutely. Absolutely no criminal. And we need to stress that, but... We can certainly see from his CV, his resume, that there are areas where he was rather economical with the truth. And
well,
I don't
he should
think
get all the money, all his money, every penny.
I think you're alone in thinking that.
No, I don't think so.
Let's find out. It was actually, the sum is £547,000. I've no idea how Mandelson got it to that. £547,000. John in Brighton says pay it. I think we must agree to disagree agreeably on that one, John, but let's see what others make of it. Thank you. 8:41. Paul's in Barnet. Paul, your reaction on this. Good morning.
Hi, Nick. Good morning. A little shout out to my wife, Juliet, who's on the way to work.
Oh, lovely. Is that what's her name? Gillian?
Juliet.
Juliet, I'm so sorry. What does Juliet do for a living? Where was she off to?
She works in Penner. She's works in promotions and advertising.
Have a good day at work, Juliet. Paul, your view on this story.
Yeah, so just, I don't understand how people are defending Starmer and with regards to Mandelson. I mean, you remember at the time, and I remember this quite distinctly, that Mandelson had said a couple of nasty things about Trump.
Right.
I think he called him a white racist and an enemy to the world, a danger to the world. I think that's I think that's public record.
Right.
And I remember there being quite a hoo-ha about whether or not he would be able to mend ties with Trump. The idea that he was close to Trump and that he'd be able to do a particularly good deal with Trump on behalf of the UK because he had these ties.
Yep. Yep.
I don't understand that. The other thing is, Karen Pierce, who was the ambassador to the US at the time, was highly respected and already had those ties. This was not a slam dunk. This had to be really worked. This was not an easy decision to... It shouldn't have been an easy decision to make. And it seems to me...
You're right. Karen Pierce was a hugely respected ambassador. I mean, look, and I'm not justifying... Remember, but just to try and put, I think, where Starmer was coming, where Sir Keir was coming from, she didn't have the relationship with Trump that Mandelson could talk of.
Well, I don't think, and that's my point, that's my first point. I don't think Mandelson did have that relationship because he was on record at the time as being quite derogatory about Trump, those previous quotes that I made. And I remember at the time that there was talk, I remember a couple of Trump aides were reportedly saying that Mandelson should stay at home, not bother coming in. I just don't understand how people are backing this up.
You're not the only one. Paul, thank you for that. Have a good day. Let me take a minute out now to feature some of the emails and texts that are coming in. Hazmook says, if I'm saying that correctly, Keir Starmer is a good man, but with respect, what I can say, he has not graduated to being a leader. Dom in Twickenham says, maybe Starmer should pay this severance pay, since he's overridden all the warnings which should trigger Mandelson's sacking and therefore the payout. Well, remember, we've been told, well, by businessman Adam and by our legal eagle, as it were, Daniel Barden, in the first hour, that there is a case to be made that in pragmatic terms, you simply pay it out. Because it by the time you've paid for lawyers, by the time you've had reputational damage, by the time you've been dragged through the courts, I don't hold with this in this case, by the way, but it's just give him the 75 grand and be done with it. Okay, you listen to ABC News breaking. This time it's 8:44. Authorities in Dubai are confirming a minor incident involving a drone crash in the Al Bada area, if I'm saying that correctly, Al Bada. No injuries reported. Relevant teams are handling the situation and assessing the incident. Earlier today, authorities confirmed a drone had fallen onto a building near Dubai Creek Harbour, causing a minor fire that was quickly brought under control. Residents are urged to follow official sources for verified updates. So it would appear at least one drone crash, maybe two drone crashes in recent time. Which rather conflicts all these influencers putting out that I've never felt as safe as when I'm in Dubai. Well, if you feel safe with the possibility of a drone coming into your hotel, your apartment block, you're a stranger person than I have to say. 8:45. Coming up after the news, just days after LBC's Online Safety Day, Ofcom is telling tech firms, keep those underage children off your platforms. But how do they intend to do that? We'll get more details on that. And, of course, earlier in the week, that was a tragedy of that architectural triumph of the Glasgow skyline being destroyed by fire.
Well, I mean, if we look at the shop that we've just been in and the building, you've got at least three, if not four, floors of residential above. So heaven forbid that something should happen in the shop.
This was the vape shop. There were concerns, as yet unproven, concerns that it was something that occurred in that vape shop that sparked the fire in Glasgow. LBC's Henry Riley has done a full report, and that was fire safety expert Jonathan Bartle, who accompanied Henry on his report. We'll hear about that later. 8:46 now. LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
A cabinet office minister has admitted to Nick there are serious questions to answer surrounding the vetting process of Peter Mandelson as US ambassador. Oil prices have risen again overnight as Iran intensifies attacks on ships in the Gulf. And LBC has discovered ISIS is encouraging its followers to target the FIFA World Cup in the United States this summer. LBC weather, windy with some heavy rain spreading across northern areas of the UK. Patchy rain and sunny spells in the southeast, a high of 14 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. There are queues on the M2 westbound to Junction 5 at Sittingbourne, and that's because of an accident and one lane is closed. And the M4's very busy eastbound to Junction 6 at Slough, and that's where a car's broken down and one lane is closed. Very busy on the A1 in both directions to Apex Corner, and that's because the traffic lights aren't working. And also the traffic lights on the A13 at Renwick Road at Dagenham aren't working, and that's causing lengthy delays on all approaches. In Farnborough, at the Farnborough Common Junction with the A21 at Crofton Road, there are still some restrictions in place, so that's causing some queues. And on the Underground, there are severe delays on the Northern and Jubilee lines.
This is LBC.
We all love a good meal, but there's no feeling quite like cooking one. Whether it's everyone at yours for a Sunday roast, or after-school sausage and mash. Quick, simple, gone in minutes. One thing brings it all together. Ah, Bisto. The original gravy. Rich, smooth, and unmistakable since 1908. When the gravy makes the dish, make the gravy. Ah, Bisto.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
BetMGM was born in Vegas, so just like the Cheltenham Festival, we know a thing or two about entertainment. Every ride, every race, every roar. This is Cheltenham Vegas style. Sign up to BetMGM now. Bet £10 and get £40 in free bets. That's right. Bet £10 and get £40 in free bets. Are you ready for the greatest show on turf? BetMGM. It's showtime.
Minimum stake £10. New customers only. Wagering requirements and conditions apply. 18 plus. Please gamble responsibly.
Calling all young creatives. Kickstart your career in media. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12 at Global Academy. GlobalAcademy.com.
What's the best present you ever got for your birthday? I bet it wasn't as life-changing as £1 million. Every week with the birthday draw, there's £1 million to be won. And you can enter from as little as £1 or via post. Enter by midnight on Sunday and your special day could win you £1 million. Visit thebirthdaydraw.com. Is it your lucky day? From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only, no purchase necessary.
A Thameslink train is a place where you can just switch off. Where you have the chance to scroll your feeds as you roll past fields. Or simply relax with a podcast, playlist or power nap. Go with your flow and save with advanced tickets at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
My name is Chevy and this is my NHS story. Over a couple of days I was getting quite intense pain on the left side of my stomach. So I called my doctors and then was referred to the Eltham CDC. It was literally a seamless, stress-free day. There was no anxiety or worry.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. So the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
8:50. Back to our conversation concerning Keir Starmer. Reputational damage after the Mandelson affair in a moment. Now, as you know, we take online safety very seriously here at LBC. Indeed, Online Safety Day was just a few days ago, and there are new measures on the way as Ofcom tightens up in this particular sphere. Joining me to explain, Ofcom's Chief Executive, Dame Melanie Dawes. Good to speak with you again, Dame Melanie. I think I've spoken to you more than I have my children over the last few days, and thank you again for the hospitality and the access you provided to me and my colleagues. What is it that you're announcing today? Morning to you.
Good morning, and thanks for having the conversation again, Nick. It's always good to talk to LBC about online safety. I know you really care about it. Look, what we're doing today is really focusing on the big companies where our kids spend their time. So there's six of them. It's TikTok, Snapchat, Instagram, Facebook, Roblox and YouTube as well. Why is that? Because while we've seen some change, so Roblox, for example, have got age checks in at aged 18 so that they can keep adults away from younger children because it's a kids' gaming platform. All of this is encouraging, but it's not enough. So today, we're turning the public spotlight on them. They've got to account to us by the end of April on a number of fronts. And, you know, we'll then publish a report card on them in May, and we'll move into enforcement where we need to.
What are you going to be looking for in those reports?
Yeah, so look, there's four things. The first is just for them to enforce their own terms and conditions. They all have, the social media companies have a minimum age of 13. But when you look at Ofcom's data, it hasn't budged over the last few years. You've got a quarter of 10 to 12-year-olds on Instagram. You've got a third are on Snapchat, and about 46% are on TikTok. So number one, enforce your own terms and conditions, and then introduce the changes needed for the Online Safety Act, the grooming measures to protect kids from adults who wish them harm. Tame those algorithms and account to us publicly about how you're doing it. And don't test your products on children anymore. Do the safety checks up front before you change your service.
Dame Melanie, you'll be aware that I've challenged you in the past that are these companies actually listening? They count their profits in some instances in the hundreds of billions of dollars. Does this indicate to you that they are listening, that they are at least seeking to form some kind of relationship with you and Ofcom?
that they're seeking to, some of them say, be best in class, but they're not there yet. And that's the point. We've got good conversations with them, but they have not yet delivered the goods. And that's why we're turning the spotlight on them today. And actually, if you look at the reactions from YouTube, Meta overnight, they're a little bit uncomfortable, I think. They are, you know, they're pushing back a bit on this. I think this public accountability is something that's new for them, shall we say. So, you know, we're going to be driving this quite hard because it is about where our kids spend their time. It really, really matters.
And lastly, you're still happy to hang your hat on. You say that we're a world leader in some of these areas that you and your colleagues are exploring and legislating.
Look, I'd never say world leader. I think that's not quite the language I'd use. But, you know, the online safety regime are some of the strongest laws in the world. And since we've been implementing a year ago, we've got protections in that no other country's got. For example, on porn sites, age checks to stop kids from stumbling across porn. So, you know, we've made some good progress so far. But goodness me, there's a lot to do, as you know.
Good to have you on again. Best wishes to you and your colleagues. Thanks again for everything last week. Dame Melanie Dawes, Ofcom's Chief Executive, talking about the desire, the drive and the reporting now that will come about as these firms are told you must keep underage children off your platforms. 8:53 is the time. We'll come back to conversation about the Mandelson scandal in a moment, but you will recall that huge fire in Glasgow on Union Street, just a stone's throw from Central Station. Remember, it caused absolute trouble. Rail travel havoc when it happened earlier the week. Now, politicians are calling for greater fire safety checks for vape shops because it's not been confirmed, but it was close to the proximity or indeed beneath, directly above, I should say, or the vape shop was beneath. Again, that has yet to be confirmed. I want to make that plain. But Paul Sweeney, the Scottish Labour MSP, has warned shops can pose a real risk to public safety, given they're under no legal obligation to have routine fire checks carried out. Just think of what's in those vape shops, all those batteries. So what are the potential risks associated with the vapes, with the lithium batteries that power them? LBC's Henry Riley went to a vape shop in West London with Jonathan Bartle. Now, he's from Source Fire Risk, to discover more.
It generates oxygen, it's generating heat, which are the two of the three elements of the triangle of fire. And then when you look at the rest of the vape itself, it's made of plastic, which obviously is combustible. So you've got a perfect recipe.
My name's Jonathan Bartle. I'm the director of Source Fire Risk Management. We work with building owners and managers to make sure that the environment in which they are is safe from fire.
And here in West London, it wasn't hard to find a vape shop within just a few minutes.
Get one of those vapes, please. Is it the 6,000 puff ones? I'll pay card, please.
Does that need charging?
You need time to charge it. And you need to replace the pods as well.
You've replaced the pods, yeah. Okay.
If the battery ever wears out or finishes or not, you just keep charging it.
Yeah, you can see the display.
I think they don't know either the risks that are inherent inside their shop. I don't think they know what could happen in the event of, or indeed what to do in the event of a lithium battery fire. And clearly, you can see that there are many, many lithium batteries stored in the shop.
£12.99 spent on a vape, and we had a peruse of the shop and the products. So what are the potential risks?
I've got a sort of box here. It's quite neatly packaged. 6,000 puffs, made in China. I'll just open that slightly, and I'm good to go. I'm at 100% battery.
So that's obviously the electric in the top.
And then that's the charger there.
The battery potentially could be overcharged. You have the potential for thermal runaway, which is where the battery gets hotter and hotter and essentially starts to self-combust. The lithium ion itself, it can start to generate heat, and the heat becomes, it self-combusts essentially. It generates oxygen, it's generating heat, which are the two of the three elements of the triangle of fire. And then when you look at the rest of the vape itself, it's made of plastic, which obviously is combustible. So you've got a perfect recipe.
Jonathan Bartle from Source Fire Risk also tells me it's a new type of challenge.
New technology, and most people don't know the impact that it could have. We've seen issues with e-scooters, e-bikes.
And it's the same, the lithium battery?
Absolutely, exactly the same. If we look at the shop that we've just been in and the building, you've got at least three, if not four, floors of residential above. So heaven forbid that something should happen in the shop, it potentially has a life safety risk for the residents above, their sleeping risks. Any business with five or more employees has to carry out a written fire risk assessment of their building. It's highly likely that from the shop owner that we've just seen, they definitely don't have a clue about fire safety and fire risk assessment. So what they need to do really is get some professional advice and guidance.
And worryingly, he tells me the fire fires are rather hard to put out.
Because it's creating its own source of oxygen and heat, what you need to be able to do is either cool it rapidly or starve it of oxygen. Well, you can't because it's generating both of those itself. So in terms of a water fire extinguisher, foam or the sort of older technologies, they're going to be ineffective. It's fundamentally almost impossible to be able to put that fire out once it's going.
LBC's Henry Riley reporting. Thanks again to Jonathan Bartle from Source Fire Risk, who accompanied Henry for that report. A minute or so to the news, which gives me time to feature some of your emails and texts coming in on the Mandelson affair. Mick in South Devon says Starmer appointed Mandelson to the position of ambassador because he knew it would pander to his MPs and thought it would enhance his position as PM. He took the gamble. Any improprieties would be swept under the carpet in the same way as he's tried to cover up a lot of the Asian or sexual... mostly Pakistani sex crimes and rape gangs. He's wrong. He needs putting before the courts how many of Starmer's misconducts in public office need to be uncovered before he is brought to book. Daniel in Chelmsford, I'm not a supporter of Mandelson. It's clearly a scandal, but just offering a balanced view, it could be that accepting the £75,000 to leave his post was done on legal advice. Sometimes taking the payment helps support an argument of innocence later, whereas refusing it could be interpreted the other way. From Labour's side, it may simply be risk management. Better to pay £75,000 now than face legal fees and potentially a much larger payout later. Not defending it, just another perspective. Well, you're right, Daniel, because that's exactly what we heard from another Daniel, Daniel Barnett, who is the Legal Eagle here on LBC. You catch him on Saturday nights. And, of course, Adam the Businessman, who found us as well. In certain circumstances, it's the pragmatic action. Mark in Leeds says, Peter's speech was disgusting, smug and arrogant. The first thing they teach you at law school is check everything, never take anyone's word for it, a complete joke. He can't even run a bath, never mind the country. Well, he is supposedly, of course, a forensically skilled barrister and a former DPP, so it does call it into question, Mark. Thank you. The music means we must move on. And we move on by getting ready for actually going backwards. Another U-turn. Fuel duty? Sir Keir Starmer in the House of Commons yesterday.
Fuel duty is frozen. It's going to remain frozen until September. And we will keep the situation under review in light of what's happening in Iran.
Plus, mind your language, English losing the grip on global charts, and a little of my exchange with the Minister defending Sir Keir, Nick Thomas-Simmons.
Most importantly, has apologised to Epstein's victims.
How on earth can you, in the same breath, say he apologised to the victims? Don't give me this idea that the sympathies are there. Show some evidence, Minister. All that and more after the 9 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock. A cabinet minister has admitted to LBC there are serious questions regarding the vetting process of Peter Mandelson as US ambassador. Sir Keir Starmer is under pressure to explain his decision after it emerged that he was warned over the peer's links to Jeffrey Epstein. Files released yesterday also show that Lord Mandelson was paid a £75,000 severance payment after he was sacked. Speaking to Nick this morning, the Paymaster General, Nick Thomas-Simmons, defended that decision.
You have someone who is claiming £547,000, the documents show us, threatening to go to a tribunal, have a dispute. It's negotiated down to £75,000. You can see why, from a numbers point, taking legal advice, that decision was made. But I share your listeners' outrage about this, that money is still being held by Peter Mandelson. The decent thing to do would be to give it to charity. Perhaps, may I gently suggest, a charity that supports victims.
Peter Mandelson denies any wrongdoing in relation to Epstein. Further, suspected Iranian attacks on tankers in the Gulf have seen the price of oil rise again this morning. Brent crude is currently trading at around $97 a barrel. President Trump has insisted that prices would come down after countries agreed to a massive release of reserves yesterday. LBC has discovered that ISIS is encouraging its followers to target the FIFA World Cup this summer. The terror group has named the event in the US as a priority target to commit mass casualty attacks. Neil Basu is the UK's former head of counter-terror policing. He's told us it's something that security services have been preparing for.
It's straight out of the ISIS playbook. So they used to have, and I believe they still do, have a monthly magazine which effectively talks about methodology, who you should attack, how you should attack them, tips and tricks for doing that. If any of our listeners want to download that, good luck, because my colleagues will be coming around to see you if you do. It's illegal to possess and use.
The security services haven't responded to LBC's request for comment, but we understand the situation is being monitored closely. You can read more on our exclusive story on the LBC app. Tech firms are being urged to do more to protect children online, with regulators warning current safeguards are not strong enough. Regulators have given companies until the end of April to explain what action they're taking. And MPs are going to investigate the fairness of the student loans system. The Treasury Committee will examine the recent decision to freeze the repayment threshold for many graduates in England. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 69 at £10,281. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.15. LBC weather, windy with some heavy rain spreading across northern areas of the UK. Some patchy rain in the southeast, a high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
The all-new, all-electric Toyota CHR Plus. Sleek, stylish and quietly reliable. Available with 0% APR representative with £1,500 deposit contribution and save £1,500 with the electric car grant. Get that Toyota electric feeling. Visit your nearest Toyota centre. Price from £34,495. Available on Toyota PCP when financed through Toyota Financial Services by 30th of June 2026. Optional final payment and indemnities may be required. See website T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning to 3 minutes after nine on Thursday, March the 12th. When is a U-turn not a U-turn? When something is under review. That's the fuel duty hike. We'll spell that out for you. And most importantly, of course, get your reaction. We'll come back to the Mandelson affair, the damage it's done to Sir Keir Starmer. He will stay as Prime Minister, not least because no one else is actually ready to go. Angela Rayner's still got these issues addressing the property purchase, what she did or didn't pay or should not have paid. Wes Streeting's campaign seems to become rather sidelined, not least because of his friendship with Lord Mandelson. And the other fellow, the self-styled King of the North, well, isn't even in the House, so there's really no one lining up to compete with him. And then in other news, watch out, English taking a bashing. That's DTMF by Puerto Rican singer. Of course, it's Bad Bunny. It's what they sung in Spanish, which is now starting to overtake English as the language of choice in music.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
As I said at the time, when is a U-turn not a U-turn? When it is a review. Has the government left the door open for yet another one? This is over that hated fuel duty hike following days of mounting pressure to scrap it. You might remember that we told you about this earlier in the week. It is due. Having kept it in position, introduced many years ago by the Conservatives, having kept it in position, it is due in September to be taken away. They kept it in for 12 months. It will go. And that will add 5p a litre to the price of your fuel. Now, you'll know on this show we're already keeping a beady eye on those fuel prices. And tomorrow we shall return to...
Nick Ferrari's Fuel Tracker on LBC.
Is this in Spanish? Is it truly? How extraordinary. We're ahead of the curve. There we are, it's a little bit of Gasolina by Daddy Yankee, and we've got our four fuel trackers already in position to go out late tonight or early tomorrow morning and report in with the prices. But you may recall, and we're in London, we're in the north, we're in the southwest, and we're in Scotland, already the prices were soaring. So can you take the pain of another 5p at the pumps? I doubt it as well. Now, in the light of this, these murmurings are going on about this possibility of a U-turn. And yesterday I put that to the Chief Secretary of the Prime Minister, Darren Jones. He had the unenviable task yesterday of appearing in the House talking about the Mandelson affair. He seemed to cling to the fact the only thing that was really going for him was, well, we didn't pay £500,000. That's about all he had. It's defence, wasn't it? But on the subject of fuel prices, asked, could he confirm the proposed hike in September will be delayed?
So you'll know that in law, you have a baked-in increase in fuel prices every year. And every year, for however many years, chancellors at the budget have decided to keep it frozen. The chancellor did that in the last budget through to September. There'll be another budget in the autumn, and the chancellor will tell us what she decides
to do. But the 5p hike is due in September, isn't it?
Yes, but the budget's also due in the autumn. So,
prior to the September hike?
Well, the chancellor hasn't confirmed the date of the budget, but it'll be around that time.
So will the budget be before or after the proposed hike in 5p fuel?
So I can't tell you the specific.
Well, it's going to be after, yet. Chief Secretary, isn't it?
Well, we have not decided on the date yet, so I can't say yes.
When was their last budget in August?
Well, it won't be in August because Parliament's not sitting.
So the first week of September. How would you stop it coming in? I'm confused.
Well, my point is that the Chancellor will want to consider this issue.
But the point is it's going to come in, isn't it? It won't be stopped.
Well, I can't say.
Well, it's due in September.
Yeah.
You agree you're not going to hold a budget in August. So, and unless you did it September the 1st or something, it's going to come in.
As I say, the Chancellor will have to announce it as part of a budget, which will happen around that time. But I don't have the authority today to tell you the precise date of the budget. That's for the Chancellor. All right.
He had a top day yesterday, didn't he, Darren Jones? Now, the debate dominated Prime Minister's questions yesterday, during which there was a strong hint from Sir Keir a U-turn could be in the offing. Here's an exchange, starting with Conservative leader Kemi Badenoch.
The Prime Minister told us at the start of the year that the cost of living was his number one priority. So can he explain how a rise in fuel duty helps with the cost of living?
Mr. Speaker, fuel duty is frozen. It's going to remain frozen until September. And we will keep the situation under review in light of what's happening in Iran.
Well, what about his next-door neighbour at number 11? Well, here's the occupant, Chancellor Rachel Reeves, speaking earlier in the day while appearing in front of a panel of MPs.
Governments always keep all taxes under review, as you know.
It's possible that you could address it.
We always keep all taxes under review, but it is much too early when those changes are not due to come into effect until September to guess where petrol prices will be then. But I'm very loath to spend government money on something that the market should be doing itself. And that's why greater competition and greater transparency about pricing is so important. Yeah. I would rather we had a properly functioning market where customers have decent information about prices at different petrol forecourts rather than subsidising the money, which often actually just goes to the retailer.
The voice you heard challenge her at the top there belongs to Conservative MP John Glenn. Let's bring to the conversation the economics columnist at the Financial Times, Soumaya Keynes, who joins me now. Thank you very much for coming on. Do we know how much is this 5p worth, possibly to the Treasury, if it stays in place? Morning to you.
Morning. So I think it's roughly around £2 or 3 billion a year. So, you know, not the single, destroyer of the public finances, nor the saviour if you were to raise it. But, not a trivial sum of money either.
How has fuel duty been ticking away over the last few months, Soumaya?
Yeah, so far, if you look at the trends, you know, I suppose the question now is, you know, has the war in Iran, shown up in surging fuel prices? So far, the increase is just nothing like what we saw after Russia invaded Ukraine, right? There has been an increase, but it really isn't at the scale that we saw in, say, 2022, when you had that massive sustained shock.
When possible political necessity comes face to face with economic reality, which way do chancellors normally go? Where do they seek their advice, do you imagine?
Well, I mean, if you look over the last 15 years, we haven't had a nominal increase to fuel duty in 15 years, right? So that, I think, tells you the answer to that question when it comes to fuel duty, right? And, you know, stepping back, this is ridiculous. I mean, it's embarrassing. Do we have a tax or don't we? You know, that's 15 years of the government saying they were going to raise it eventually and then not doing it. Now, I think on this occasion, if we do see another massive energy price shock, you know, of the scale that we saw after Russia invaded Ukraine, you know, they have my sympathies if they wanted to do something to cushion that. You know, postponing the increase to fuel duty, you know, is not an insane thing to do. But I think so far we haven't yet seen the same scale of that shock. And so the kind of the cost of seriousness of flip-flopping again is quite high in my books.
Sumaya, thank you. I can't help but noticing the spelling of your family name. You are a relative of the unbelievable John Maynard Keynes, are you?
I am indeed. He's my great-great-uncle.
Well, what other line were you ever going to go into? It had to be this, didn't it? You will be editor of the Financial Times before we know it. I am absolutely no doubt. Thanks for your time, Sumaya. We'll talk again soon. Best wishes to you, Sumaya Keynes. Wow, great-great-niece of the legendary John Maynard. Wow, Keynesian economics. If you know what I'm talking about, look it up. What a clever bloke he was. I studied him briefly, God, a long time ago, at A-level, at school. Oh, man. Right, let's come back to the important battle for the motorists, this price pump, what it might mean at the pumps. I'm sorry, prices at the pumps. Simon Williams, head of policy at RAC. I can imagine I know what I'm going to hear from you, Simon, but what do you hope the Chancellor does? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, prices have been rising dramatically. We've seen 7 pence a litre go on to petrol. We're up to an average of 140 across the country. Diesel's gone up by 15 pence a litre to 157 on average. So drivers are really feeling it. When you fill up an average car, family car with petrol, you're paying another £4 more than you were and £8 more for diesel. So drivers are under pressure. Household budgets are being squeezed. But, you know, we already have the 5p duty cut in place. A penny is set to go back on in September as a start of the phasing back to the full 58p. So I think the logical thing is to keep that in place. Drivers are telling us that, you know, it's hurting them. So they would want that to stay in place.
The problem is, as our economics commentator, the Financial Times, has just told us, it's worth possibly as much as £3 billion. Where are they going to find that sign? I know you're not economist, but where would they find that?
Well, I mean, I think the Chancellor kind of hinted at things a bit yesterday. Back in 2022, when this came in, we made kind of calls to say it wasn't being fully passed on. The CMA were ordered to investigate. They found that drivers had been overcharged by near £900 million in 22. 23, it went up to £1.6 billion. And, you know, the CMA have continued to say that margins are at historically high levels.
Lastly, sorry, did you say, how long has it been in position, Simon?
Since spring 22, when Rishi Sunak, as Chancellor, brought it in at the start of the Ukraine conflict.
Okay. And obviously, it's been, lastly, a huge boon, of course, to motorists. And remember, the commercial drivers as well, the lorry drivers that shift just about everything up and down our roads.
Yeah, 8 in 10 people that we survey say they would struggle to get by without having access to a car. We know that the economy is very much driven by people being able to move around the country successfully and affordably. And prices are still high, much higher than they were. You know, back in 2016, we saw, you know, petrol get down to almost £1 a litre. You know, 10 years later, we're up not near record prices. Back in summer 22, we saw petrol go to an average of 191.5 and diesel nearly £2 a litre. So we're away off that yet. And oil had settled down a bit, but again, now has gone nearer to 100.
Grateful for your input. Simon Williams, head of policy at the RAC. So it's been in since 2022. You'd be a very brave... It's a bit like the triple lock, isn't it? Or spending more on defence. Not at the moment, but when everything seems to be fairly settled. Or spending on prisons. You're a very brave government to do that. This is what we intend to do. We're going to spend a lot of money on prisons. Why the hell are you doing that? We're going to buy more battleships. Why are you doing that? We need it for the health service. We're going to scrap the triple lock. No, you can't. Pensions will suffer. This one, we're going to scrap fuel duty. Brave and bold, but ultimately, is it wrong? We'll take your calls on that. And something that's undoubtedly wrong was the appointment of Peter Mandelson as our ambassador. The minister, the unfortunate minister sent out, given the hospital pass for the media round this morning, was Paymaster General Nick Thomas Symonds.
Most importantly, has apologised to Epstein's victims.
How on earth can you, in the same breath, say he apologised to the victims? Don't give me this idea that the sympathies are there. Show some evidence, Minister. They got it tested, didn't they? 9:15, LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
A Cabinet Office minister has admitted to Nick there are serious questions to answer surrounding the vetting process of Peter Mandelson as US ambassador. Oil prices have risen again overnight as Iran intensifies attacks on ships in the Gulf. An LBC has discovered ISIS is encouraging its followers to target the FIFA World Cup in the United States this summer. LBC weather windy with some heavy rain spreading across northern areas of the UK. Patchy rain and sunny spells in the southeast, a high of 14 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Delays on the M2 westbound to Junction 5 at Sittingbourne, and that's following an accident. The M4's very slow eastbound to Junction 6 at Slough, where a car's broken down. Long delays on the A1 in both directions in Edgware to Apex Corner, and that's because the traffic lights on the junction roundabout aren't working. And in Dagenham, there are lengthy delays both ways on the A13 heading towards the Renwick Road junction because the traffic lights aren't working. Also, delays continue on the trains. Great Western Railway can't run between Marlow and Bourne End. On the Underground, there are severe delays on the Jubilee line, but minor delays now on the Bakerloo, Northern and Victoria lines.
This is LBC.
Breakups, that's a tricky one. That's why EE is the only major provider who'll give you up to £300 to switch. You'll get full fibre, but you'll also get EE's most powerful Wi-Fi 7 as standard, so the whole house can do more, like streaming that series whilst your work calls stay crystal clear. Switch to EE today.
Up to £300 credited to your EE account. Verify at ee.co.uk/claims. New BT Group customers only. 62% availability terms apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
You've probably been with the same energy supplier for decades. And why wouldn't you be? Loyalty matters. But lately, bigger hasn't always felt better. You've probably dealt with long waits and endless automated menus in search of someone who can actually help. Octopus Energy is now Britain's biggest energy supplier, trusted by over 8 million customers, because we do things differently. Our people focus on the most important thing, you. When you call, you'll speak to a real person. No robotic scripts, no computer says no, just an honest conversation with someone who actually wants to help. Join the millions who've already made the move. Octopus Energy, recommended by Which, a record 9 years running. Visit octopus.energy/better for verification.
Combine your pensions with PensionBee and take control of your retirement. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place when investing your capital is at risk.
A message from TfL.
I saw him in the local news a few days after. His name's Rakesh. They had to put him into a coma just because I didn't look again at that turning. He had 2 kids. How did I not see his bike ahead of me? Well, I didn't look again. He didn't make it.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
A penny here, a penny there, it all adds up. Or a penny for your thoughts, Sir Keir Starmer. Are you going to go ahead with that fuel duty hike? Graham in Newark, what should he do, Graham? Good morning.
Well, I just wanted to point out what, which I think is a huge injustice.
Go ahead.
Which is, you get the wholesale price of fuel, whatever that is, and then they add the fuel duty on, and then you pay that on top of that.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
So you pay tax on top of your tax.
Yep. 'Twas ever thus. Well, not while the fuel days, of course, is halted, but yes, they take it every which way they can.
Yeah, I think that's hugely unfair, actually. I really do. As for Keir Starmer and what I think about him, well, I think you really know what someone, a politician, believes, not only by what they say, but by what pain they're prepared to endure for their principles. And I think so many U-turns show that he's what he believes is in staying in power, and he'll change whatever he needs to change to stay in power.
It's not a good look, though, is it? You heard that research at the AAA... the RAC, I repeat, the RAC has done how in rural areas people rely... It's a lifeline in rural areas. I appreciate if you live in a big city, if you live in a town, and I don't know whether you live in Newark or live out in the Nottinghamshire countryside, but it is an absolute lifeline for vehicles for these folk.
It absolutely is, and especially because bus services are less than what they used to be. I mean, it is a 100% necessity of daily living.
Totally agree. I used to live, and my late mum lived in a village where the very, very restricted bus service. You didn't have a car, my mum lived there, I think there were about 3 shops. I don't think there's any now. She just wouldn't have been able to get around. Graham, thank you. David Lind, Treasury is gaining a nice VAT increase with the rising price of fuel. Exactly the point you made, Graham, there. Matt in Warrington, you can't... These petrol prices don't affect me. I only ever put £20 in anyway. Well, Matt, you're obviously having sport with me, because obviously you don't get as much unleaded for 20 quid as you did a few days ago, and when we do our fact check tomorrow, I fear possibly you'll get even less, or even fewer litres, however much 20 quid might normally get you. Nigel's in Temple Fortune. Nigel, I know you sort of flip between here and the United States. How much is a litre of gas in the United States? Any idea?
Well, good morning. Well, it's sold per gallon, not per litre, and where we live, the cheapest at the moment, looking yesterday evening, is $3.74.
Break or that down
$4. If you look at, say, a dollar at £1.30 to the pound, at a rough estimate,
yeah,
it's going to be considerably cheaper than nearly £8 a gallon here. Because if it's £1.70 a litre, you times that by 4.54, which will give you the actual cost. It's considerably more expensive. And what
it's north of 8 quid in UK, and a gallon of gas in the US is what in dollars, did you say?
Where we are, it's between 3.74 and 4.24 a gallon.
So that's about 3 quid, roughly.
Yeah, so the good gallon God. Is slightly smaller. But I think what's important, Nick, here,
yeah,
and it doesn't whether it's a Labour or Tory government, they don't quite understand finances. When fuel goes up, it costs the emergency services more to operate their ambulances, police cars and fire engines. It costs bus companies more to operate their buses. And, of course, it costs us more in the shop because groceries have to be delivered, which is more expensive.
Yep.
So
yep.
Everything goes up. Why don't they just remove fuel duty altogether, get the economy going, get businesses going, and you know, the person who's on a small income, who can just about afford a car, who needs a car, is draining their resources.
Well, hold on a second. Not that I say I disagree with you, but we heard from our economics contributor that the penny increase alone is worth £2 to £3 billion. If you were to take all fuel duty off, we are obviously going to cost the Treasury tens of, I imagine, billions of pounds. Where are we going to make it up?
Well, let's look at foreign aid, how much we're giving away for ridiculous, silly products in different countries where we can save the money and use it here more to the benefit of this country.
More effectively, you would say, Nigel. Thank you for that. We'll take more calls on that in just a moment. Now, if you are just waking up or you're looking at the newspaper headlines, they make grim reading for everyone at number 10. Not even that much better at number 11. For The Sun, it's "For Pete's Sake, Prime Minister." For The Daily Mail, "Not fit to lead the country." For The Guardian, "PM was told of reputational risk over Mandelson links to Epstein." It's even the splash, the front page story of the Financial Times. "Aide warns Starmer of risk in Mandelson's appointment." So what are number 10 saying? Well, nothing directly, but they are, as ever, or most every morning, putting out a minister on the media round. And in the first hour of the show, it was the Paymaster General, Nick Thomas Symonds. He had the hospital pass of being put on this morning. He was out to say how they would restore integrity with enhanced checks and vetting of procedures for appointments such as ambassadorial posts. But I started by asking him, how did Mandelson ever get the job?
Prime Minister has said that he made a mistake, that he deeply regrets the time that Mandelson spent as the ambassador to the United States. The Prime Minister has taken responsibility and, most importantly, has apologised to Epstein's victims, who every time this matter returns to our public debate are re-traumatised by having to
I'm sorry, he apologises to the victims, yet he appointed someone to this high office who he knew retained close links with the most infamous paedophile on the planet. How on earth can you, in the same breath, say he apologised to the victims? He enhanced the role of someone who stayed in the apartment of that paedophile when he was in jail. He appointed someone who had close links with Ghislaine Maxwell, who was in jail for working, trafficking with that paedophile. Don't give me this idea that the sympathies are there. Show some evidence, Minister.
So, first of all, you're right that the document that you're referring to, the Cabinet Office due diligence document, says that Mandelson reportedly stayed in Epstein's house. It also contains there a quote by from Lord Mandelson's spokesperson talking about the nature of the relationship. Now, what the Prime Minister then did was had questions put to Peter Mandelson. Now, I can't...
And who put those questions, Minister?
I can't...
That would be one of Mandelson's closest friends, Matthew, now Lord Doyle.
I'm treading very...
That would be like me speaking to my wife about something, in a sense, wouldn't it? What's the point?
I'm treading really carefully here, because you will know the Metropolitan Police has asked us
not
everything we're talking about, Minister, is in the public domain. I wish it wasn't you today, because I like you and you're a decent bloke. This is a shameful, this is a shambles, and it comes back to one person. That one person is the Prime Minister, who wasn't warned once, wasn't warned twice. He had four separate warnings. You talk about beefing up the process. The process is already in position, and the Prime Minister chose to ignore it. That is the harsh reality that you are trying to defend, and I wish it wasn't you, Minister.
No, Nick, the document isn't before us, which is the answers to questions that were put. The reason I'm just treading carefully about speaking about that document is we've had a request from the Metropolitan Police not to release the document. And the reason for that is, as you know, there is a criminal investigation going on to Peter Mandelson, and wider criminal investigations going on to the whole of this vile Epstein set of crimes as well. I don't want to be saying anything, nor I'm sure would anyone else, that would mean that as a consequence of that, someone further down the line, can't take that investigation forward, someone can't face justice. So that's why I'm in a difficult position, as I'm sure you'd understand answering this question. That's why I'm treading carefully. But
do you think due process was followed, Minister?
I think there are serious questions about this process. There's two elements to this, just to be clear. There's the due diligence bit, where we've got, as I say, the missing document. We've then got the vetting process, where I think there are questions there to be answered in terms of, as I say, the point at which it was completed, the order at which it took place. We are absolutely looking at that. We've already changed it, so you have to complete it before the appointment is taken up. But yes, in terms of looking at this process, absolutely.
Right. So you agree that there is concern over the process, yet the Prime Minister told the House in September that full due process had been followed. It hadn't. We now learn that it was, quotes, weirdly rushed, and he'd had four warnings, including a briefing note in which he was told that Lord Mandelson was president of a firm called Global Council, which had failed to disclose associations with the Qatari Free Zone Authority. This is not due process. This is cooking the books.
So all the steps you would expect in terms of a Cabinet Office due diligence process and the various stages of the vetting process. So that is, just to be clear, there's something called developed vetting, which is it's a very intrusive process, but it's a very important part of the process for appointing people to high public office. And what's called the STRAP process, which is a very high level of clearance. So all the steps are all there, Nick. The steps have all happened. But the point then is, the completion of them at the point that Mandelson takes up the post. And frankly as well, as the Prime Minister has set out, what he then finds out when you have Bloomberg and then the US Department of Justice disclosures in September of last year, when the Prime Minister then, finding out that information, immediately moves to dismiss Lord Mandelson.
So he relies on Bloomberg, do we? We rely on a news agency.
Well, we shouldn't be.
You just said it was Bloomberg. They help bring this about, and the Daily Telegraph. What does that say of the government?
Well, what it says to me is that we have to, exactly as we are doing, go back and look through this whole process as to how it works, not just in terms of learning on Peter Mandelson, but more generally. And that is precisely the work the Prime Minister is leading.
The unfortunate Paymaster General Nick Thomas Simmons there. We'll come back to your reactions on that. Also coming up after the news. I've never seen the team so invigorated. Honestly, there could be an oil crisis if Prime Minister abdicates, a king abdicates, Prime Minister falls. I've never seen such energy from my team. We will be playing this regularly. It is, of course, Bizco Cheeto by Rosalia from Lux, in which Rosalia sings in 13 different languages. The times they are a-changing, as Spotify more diverse cast of voices in English takes a bashing. More on that after this. It's 9:30. You're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. The news is with Dominic Ellis.
Further Iranian attacks on ships in the Gulf overnight has led to oil prices continuing to rise. President Trump insisted that prices would come down after countries agreed to a massive release of reserves. LBC has discovered that ISIS is encouraging its followers to target the FIFA World Cup this summer. The terror group has named the event as a priority target to commit mass casualty attacks. And a cabinet office minister has admitted to Nick due diligence fell short before Peter Mandelson was appointed as ambassador to Washington. Documents have revealed Keir Starmer was warned of a reputational risk over the peers' links to Jeffrey Epstein.
LBC weather. Windy with some heavy rain spreading across northern areas of the UK. Some patchy rain and bright spells in the southeast. A high of 14 degrees.
Hey, smart speaker. Play LBC.
Good morning, I'm Nick Ferrari. It's time to get to your calls.
First time caller. A little bit nervous.
Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for taking my call.
They have no Navy, they have no Air Force, and they have no leadership. We could call it a tremendous success right now, or we could go further, and we're going to go further.
Hear every side of the story.
Why do people think that Trump wants to bring democracy to Iranians while he's dismantling democracy in his own country?
There is a general feeling within our government that defence is something that we have to vastly up because of what's happening in the world, and they will find a way of doing it.
Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. LBC, leading Britain's conversation.
Our pets in a pickle. We're here when it matters most. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato,
whoa,
and spicy smoked paprika and chili.
Woo-hoo!
Try Dolmio Intensify, pasta sauces with serious flavour. Dolmio, yeah!
My name is Paul, and this is my NHS story. I started to notice that the hip was becoming numb. The GP referred me for an X-ray. And just being informed, being kept in the loop, I feel much better in myself, and I feel confident about how the future is going to unfold.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
At AJ Bell, we believe every customer deserves brilliant service, which is just one reason we're rated excellent on Trustpilot. And we all trust pilots, with their smooth, captainy voices that make you feel like you'd let them land anywhere they like. Sorry, where was I? Right, AJ Bell, rated excellent by sexy pilots. I mean Trustpilot. I'm a flight risk. AJ Bell, feel good investing. The value of your investments can go up or down.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Now, another area as regards fuel prices we must not avoid and we must absolutely register is if, as I was when I was a child, your home is heated by oil. I know it's relatively rare, but particularly in rural areas, as I grew up in Kent, we had this massive tanker arrive and it would disgorge goodness knows how many gallons of oil in those days. And I remember even now, it would be with a heavy heart that Mum or Dad would make the phone call, because it was quite a check that they would have. Yes, ask your grandparents, that they would write. So goodness only knows what it's like now. John's in Prestatyn. I've been reading, and indeed I took a call when this started. I think they're more than doubling the cost of heating oil, aren't they? Good morning, John.
Correct, Nick. Hi, good morning, mate. Hello. Yeah, they're more than doubling it.
Give us the price, right? What can you recall roughly what you were paying per litre, say, January or earlier this year?
Well, only 10 days ago, it was, for 500 litres, it was £360.
Right. How long would that last you, typically? How many months would that?
I'd say about 3.
Okay, that gives you roughly 3 months. Okay.
Yeah, maybe 3 months. So I thought, well, it's getting a bit light, it's getting a bit warm, and I'll leave it till next week. Mm. What a mistake I made.
Go on. What's 500 litres today?
Well, I looked on Monday, and it was £770.
Good grief.
From £360 to £770. Today, it's £850.
What? Oh, my God.
For 500 litres of heating oil.
That's getting close to trebling the price. We more than doubled it before. We're looking almost at trebling it now. This is outrageous. What about supplies? Has your regular supplier got it? There's no shortage.
He's got it. They just can't give us a date on delivery. They give us a 2-week window. But the price that I paid on Monday, I had to give them £780.
Yeah.
They said that might go up before delivery.
Oh, hang on. So despite the fact that you buy it at £780, if on the point of delivery it should be, you have to pay the extra £100?
Or £200 or £300, yep.
Oh, mate. Can't you just wear another sweater?
Well, I thought of that, and I'm thinking of having showers in work, but my wife. Oh. She won't come to my workplace and have a shower.
It's always the wives, isn't it? It's always the wives. Oh, John, you need this to end and end quick, don't you, sport?
I do, but honestly, when I seen that price hike, I couldn't sleep. I was thinking, what am I going to do here? I'll have to get the credit card out.
And just explain, this is, of course, I would imagine, like when I was a boy, there's no gas supply, and that's the only way you can heat the house.
Correct. Mm. Or we plug the, you know, the electric heaters in, and that's through the roof as well.
Well, yeah, there's no way of odds in it, apart from if your wife won't come to your workplace and have a shower. What a shame. Not showering together, it'd be rather romantic. John, look after yourself. Thank you. We'll talk more about fuel and fuel duty and calls coming in on Peter Mandelson. But it's an interesting one. Well, certainly it interests my production team, so they've decided we're doing it. The times they are changing on Spotify. A more diverse cast of voices enjoying pop stardom. The Spanish singer Rosalia admitted, this is incredible, she lost count of the number of languages she sang in on her recent album after a standout performance at the Brits. You may recall she performed alongside Bjork. She's 33. She sang 13 languages in Looks, her album. Catalan, Latin, Sicilian, Ukrainian, Arabic, Japanese, Mandarin and Hebrew. She says it's a tribute to female saints and mystics, and she's not alone. Mind your language, English is losing its grip. There is something in this, because the whole, when I say the whole production team, those who are awake, are all nodding their heads, and so there is something in this music. You heard, here we go, Berghain, La Jugula Reliquia, all by Rosalia from Lux, which I mentioned earlier, and then Noiveol and DTMF by, of course, Bad Bunny, the Puerto Rican who was at the Super Bowl. And when was that? It was last month, as I recall, wasn't it? Well, suddenly you realise what it's like if you listen to all these English rock songs, and they haven't got a clue what's going on, but they just like the music. Matt Charlton, music writer and broadcaster. Is this something for our artists to celebrate or to be fearful of? Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, absolutely to celebrate. I mean, a lot of people will be going, what won't make any difference to me, because I can never understand what they were saying anyway in the first place, these pop artists. But no, it's great. It's not a specifically UK thing. Obviously, the UK is listening to this music, but it's not an emerging language thing in the UK, unless you count Kneecap, who sing in Irish, of course.
Right.
But this is a very international thing, and it's a sign of the democratisation of music through Spotify. So the world music, as it used to be called, isn't just the stuffy department downstairs at HMV anymore that, you know, not many people are in. It's something people are really engaging in, and as we just heard, that's really coming through the Spanish language and the dominance of the Spanish language in the US, and of course K-pop as well, and J-pop, which have both been around for a while now, but they're really, really breaking through. The big breakthrough hit of last year was K-pop Demon Hunters and Golden, which was also a performance at the Brits.
Is Robbie Williams going to have to start speaking in Portuguese or Spanish?
No, he could just stick with the Stoke accent. I think that's enough for some people. No, it's really not, it's not so much a UK thing. But the other thing that's emerging, though, is I'd never heard of is Brazilian funk, which was a big statistic on Spotify. And I'm also a travel writer, so I'm pitching the hell out of that to go and investigate Brazilian funk.
Well, it's got to be a commission from the Daily Telegraph,
They would love that. I can imagine the comment section now, can't you?
And what's driving this? A more global audience with global languages.
It's more global audience, and it's the access to the music, really. That's what it is. And as you just said, sometimes you don't need to listen to the lyrics as such. I was actually thinking about a Gorillaz song I knew yesterday that I've realised. It's called Feel Good Inc. It's from ages ago, and I realised I've never really listened to the lyrics to it. I just really like the vibe of it, and a lot of people are doing that. Rosalia, who, as you said, sang in 14 languages on her album, she learned 7 of them phonetically. So she can't speak 7 of them, but she learned 7 of them phonetically too, just for the vibe, just because it fitted in with the music that was coming across on that track.
Matt, good luck with your travels. Hope you get that commission. Matt Charlton, music writer and broadcaster. Travel writer available for hire, of course, and commissions. If you want to come via me, then, I don't know, I'll go along and accompany Matt. Matt, thanks for that. Listen, the figures can't lie. Here we go. Spotify released data illustrating the trend. Songs in 16 different languages. reaching Spotify's global top 50 last year, more than double the number in 2020. The fastest-selling genres, generating over $100 million US, are Brazilian funk that Matt Charlton just mentioned, K-pop, urban Latino and reggaeton, the Puerto Rican singer and rapper Bad Bunny, whose music is almost exclusively in Spanish, exemplifies this. He was the most streamed artist last year. Try this on for size. 21 billion listeners. 21 billion. Man alive, this is a market, isn't it? Well, it took makes fuel duty look rather small, doesn't it? A penny on a pint, on a gallon, whatever it is, a penny on a litre. Munesh, we'll talk about that in a moment. But George in Wimbledon. George, are you into some of this music I've just mentioned? Do you like a bit of Brazilian funk?
Oh, no, I'm a Kylie Minogue fan.
Oh, you're
You and I have spoken before. I'm the gay from Wimbledon, and you're the big gay bear.
I am a great big gay bear.
You really are. So my husband is Lebanese, and when we met, well, I used to live in Dubai, I had no idea that there was this huge world of Arabic music that we had that I had never heard. And I think we're looking at this conversation through a sort of Anglo-Saxon English-speaking lens. And in the Arab world, they've got mega stars like Fairuz. Any person who's Arabic listening to this, they'll know who Fairuz is. She's the diva of Arabic music. She's right. Like the Shirley Bassey.
Oh, right.
Then there's Nancy Ajram. Huge! Like the Mariah Carey of the Arab world. Now, my husband had never heard of Fleetwood Mac. He'd never heard of... he'd only knew two Madonna songs.
Right.
And he's 39, you know, this is not some old person. They just don't listen to Western English music the way that we might expect them to.
Which do you prefer? What do you have in the house? If you entertain people, what would you have in the background for a dinner party with you and your husband?
I have to do tapes, if you like, where I put a balance of Western or English and Arabic. I can't stand Arabic music.
Oh, really?
To me, it all sounds the same. It's got the Arabic feel. They love it. It's campy. It's awful. My husband, my dad died on Christmas Eve.
I'm so horrible, sorry.
I know. And so we went to empty the house, and upstairs were all my records. Kylie, Madonna, you know, campy stuff.
Bit of Dolly Parton, I hope.
No. But 9 to 5 is a classic.
What, no Shirley Bassey? No, go on. Where's Dusty when you want to?
All the gay icons. But bless him, my husband, he was in Beirut and I've just got back. He bought me a record player. It just arrived out of nowhere. And he said, because your dad's passed, you can listen to all your records. And I went online and I bought him the classic Fairuz album.
Right.
Her first album. And this is for him. He's like, oh my God, I can listen to Fairuz now when I come back to London. So there's this whole world of music that I had no idea existed. I mean, Nancy Ajram is huge. And you go to the Middle East and you see the billboards with them advertising, you know, Western products.
I know you just want to talk about Kylie Minogue, but I've got to ask you, you say your husband's in Beirut now, did you say?
We just escaped
I was going to say, you lived in Dubai. Come on, a bit of how you react to what's going on in the Gulf, if I can get you on that, George, before I let you go.
Yeah, I mean, we were there last week I've been there for the last 3 weeks, so we were there when it started, and I've never heard a ballistic missile land before. We were in Beirut, and I can only describe it as God punching the earth. It's a dark thud, and it's horrific, and I was awoken at 2:30 in the morning, and I woke up, but Saeed had sleep through literally a war. He was there, he brought up during the Civil War and the 2006 war. So right. I jumped out of bed and said, Saeed. And he said, what is it? I said, it's bombs. Bloody bombs. And he's like, oh, okay. So we went to the window and looked over Beirut and we couldn't see them because it's down in the south. But do you know what, Nick? It's horrific. It's terrifying.
I bet it is.
The sound, it resonates.
It's the percussive nature of it, isn't it? I was in Belfast once when it was bombed and it just goes through your bones, doesn't it? It's extraordinary.
It really is. And do you know what I'd say about the Lebanese? They party through it. They've been here before. They hate it. They hate it. They're done with it.
Yeah.
But the Fairuz will get them through it.
Bless you. Best wishes to your husband. Always. I'm very sorry. My obviously condolences to the loss of your dad. It's going to make that time of year tougher for you in the future. But you've always got a really loving husband to send you the record player. That's great. Take care of yourself, George. Thank you. I misspoke. I think I probably misspoke. Darren and Nick pointing out, if I said 21 billion listeners, if I said that, I'm an idiot because there aren't enough people in the planet. Listen. So if I did say listeners, I'm so sorry. I hope I hope you misheard it. But anyway, 21 billion listens for Bad Bunny. We'll return to Bad Bunny. And Munesh, we're talking Field Duty with you after this. It's just turned 9:46, LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Further Iranian attacks on ships in the Gulf overnight has led to oil prices continuing to rise. LBC has discovered that ISIS is encouraging its followers to target the FIFA World Cup this summer, and a cabinet office minister has admitted to Nick that due diligence fell short before Peter Mandelson was appointed as US ambassador. LBC weather, windy with some heavy rain spreading across northern areas of the UK, patchy rain and bright spells in the southeast, a high of 14 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Delays on the M25 anti-clockwise at Junction 9 at Leatherhead. It's because a coach has broken down and one lane is closed. The traffic lights aren't working at the A13 at Renwick Road in Dagenham, so do take care at that very busy junction. Also, the problems continue on the M23 southbound. It's slow at Junction 10 at Crawley because a lorry's broken down. It's actually on the exit slip road, but there are delays back into the main carriageway. Great Western Railway services can't run between Marlow and Bourne End. It's because of a track problem. Also, Southwestern Railway services are disrupted at Basingstoke, and on the Underground, there are minor delays on the Piccadilly, Jubilee and Bakerloo lines.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
Complaining about and blaming Keir Starmer for a long-scheduled, still uncertain, six-month distance increase in fuel prices, literally hours after calling for more war in the Middle East. Oh, boy.
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Left it late for Mother's Day. Don't worry, Moonpig's got ya. Because there's Mother's Day cards, and then there's Moonpig Mother's Day cards.
Aww.
You can add stickers, her favourite photos, even a message in your very own handwriting. Get it there with next day delivery. So there's no faff, no panic, and you'll still be the favourite. Plus, get 20% off when you use code MUM20. Because this Mother's Day, everyone deserves a
Moonpig.com.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. They will affect how you manage your tenancies. Act now. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
Right, who's all in for Cancer Research UK's Race for Life? Sunday Leaguers! Dog lovers! Bait clubbers! Banger dancers! Baby ravers! Potters! Whether you walk it, jog it, or run it, go all in against cancer. All in to help fund life-saving research.
Sign up to your local 3K, 5K, 10K or Pretty Muddy event from just $14.99. Search Race for Life. Prices vary by event distance and participant age.
Whether you still own it or not, if you had a diesel car built between 2009 and 2020, you could be entitled to compensation. Checking takes minutes at jointheclaim.com, and if successful, compensation could be worth thousands. Diesel emissions claims are still open for Ford, Nissan, Renault, Mercedes, BMW and Jaguar Land Rover. Don't miss out. Join millions of drivers across the UK. Check your vehicle now at jointheclaim.com.
Join the claim!
Thanks for the key deliverables, David. Now, who'd like to
stay out all night?
Yahoo! That's brilliant. So, okay, sales targets. Are we hitting
it? Hit the dance floor!
There's more than one you, and with Specsavers 2 for 1, you can choose glasses for at least two use. From £70 with standard single-vision lenses.
Nice moves, David!
Book an appointment at specsavers.co.uk. Conditions apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Straight from Bad Bunny to Fuel Duty. Munesh in Southall, thanks for hanging on the line. What is it you want to tell me, Munesh? Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Nick. How are you?
Good, thank you, sir.
Yeah, may I make two simple points?
Please.
The first one is basically logical, and it can easily be demonstrated, and the second one would be a matter of principle, which I'll go into later. But the logical bit is any tax or duty you put on fuel, it affects the poorest more than the richest, because someone on a disposable income of £100 a week, if they've got to pay £10 a week more on their fuel, it's going to hurt them more than someone with £1,000 a week disposable income. That's blatantly obvious.
Good point. Yep, good point.
So if the government now is insisting that they want to help the worst people in worst condition the most, this isn't the go-around way to do it.
But do you think they are doing that, though? Well, I mean, I know that's what they say, but in reality, is it happening?
Well, I think after 17 U-turns, they don't know whether they're coming or going, but that's besides the point.
It would be the 15th if it was. Some people would say, of course, if you're going the wrong way down the M1, it's a good idea to turn around, or you'll end up in Leeds instead of London.
Yeah, but the fact that you've done 15 times the wrong way, that shows that you're not really good at your job. You know, you're making mistakes time and time again. But I'll go more into that. Now, the fact about principle, yeah, the whole purpose of these duties and levies and all that was about being fairness and equitable and about not taxing or putting burden on necessity goods. And in fact, the levies were meant for luxury goods. Now, it's patently obvious, like, you know, you have, like, baby foods, which are VAT-free. Mm-hmm. There are certain things like clothing, baby clothing, which are, there was a reason for that. I mean, the fuel is a necessity. Why are they treating it like a luxury? When was the last time you woke up in the morning and told your wife, I'm taking the family car around the M25 just for the fun of it. I'll do 2 laps and I'll come back, yeah?
Never. When I was a kid, when I had my first car, you would drive for fun. Now, I can't think of many people who do. Just go out for a spin. I can't believe it.
Yeah, so people don't understand what the difference is between necessity. Mm. I say there are three things in the world. One is necessity, one is luxury, and there is something in between called hybrid, which could be necessity, but could you do without if the need be? And then the option is there. But in any case, the fuel, even the electric in your house, that's necessary. You can't live without heating. You can't live without fans in the summer.
No.
So the government should take an approach to this and think to themselves, listen, let's be, you know, radical about this. Let's have a set of rules that people need this stuff. Let's not tax it heavily. Let's not put extra burdens on people who can't afford to do without it.
Totally agree with you on that. Lastly, what do you think they will do, though, Munesh, as regards the fuel duty hike?
I think they'll wing it to the last moment, because I don't think they've got a plan.
No, and certainly one of the plans they've had in the past, as you said, I don't think we're quite at 17 U-turns, but I think we are. It's been proven that we're at 14 U-turns, so this would be the 15th if they do go ahead with that. Munesh, thank you. Getting them to put it into practice or put it into stark reality, we've worked out that that penny would be worth somewhere in the region of £2 to £3 billion to the Treasury. That's a lot of money to turn your back on. We have to be honest about that. Now, a moment or two ago, we were talking about, we heard from George, about how much he despises a strong word, how he finds it difficult to listen to a bit of Arab music. This is as Spotify says that English needs to mind their language, because artists who sing in a different languages are starting to dominate. Bad Bunny, 21 billion listens. And that had Omar get in touch. Omar says, I'm Arab and I gay. I love that chat with George about Nancy Ajram and Fyrus. Fyrus, if I'm saying that correctly, will get us through anything. Well, I don't know about that, but certainly we've got a little bit now for you of Nancy Ajram. I wonder what they're saying. Desperately nervous about what he's singing about. There we go. We just have to plead ignorance. Take the fifth. Well, that is, if I'm saying it right, Art Juanos by Nancy Ajram, and I get it. I can see what the delight is about that. Thanks, Omar, for turning us on to that, and George, in a way. James, coming to you about fuel duty. Just want to feature some of the emails that came in. We had a conversation, and you know LBC takes the subject of online safety very seriously, and we had Online Safety Day at the start of the week, and we had another conversation with Ofcom about measures they're putting in place. A couple of you wanted to get involved in that. Indy says, why don't the parents take some accountability and check what the kids access? We're talking about 10, 12-year-olds here. It should start at home. Matt Dangerfield says, I have 4 children, twin 17-year-old boys, a 13-year-old girl and an 11-year-old girl. Man, I bet it's busy around your house at Christmas if you celebrate it. I don't allow them to have those apps. The twins can now. I remind you, the twins are 17. But the other two, no. They're 13 and 11. I use family controls. When are parents going to be held accountable as well? So it's interesting, both of those on that same line, that the parents do have to shoulder some responsibility. Now, the responsibility for removing or putting in the fuel duty would fall to this government. And I've said before, would it make sense? Possibly. But you'd be a brave government before. It would be like standing down the triple lock. spending money on battleships, which nobody does until now, and you realise that you should have done, or even spending money on prisons. James is in Maidenhead. James, your reaction. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Thanks for taking my call. I'll get this in quickly. So, the classic line of, let fuel duty's been the same for the last 15 years. Well, physical drag...
Well, the lot came in 2022 under Rishi Sunak, just as Chancellor, just to remind everybody about that, yeah.
Yes, correct. Okay, I'd say the physical drag as well on all of our income has not changed. And right. That means that a lot of us are being dragged into higher tax bands, as you're well aware.
Yep.
So we have less spending money. The tax is still rising just in other areas. And quite rightly, as another caller has already said, the funds could come from other sources. The government's just choosing to keep this tax. No other country has, to my knowledge, has tax on fuel as high as we do.
Right.
And a secondary issue, just getting quickly, is locally to me in Maidenhead, mm-hmm. 4 out of 5 of the garages within a 20-minute drive of me are all owned by the same company.
Oh, really?
Where is the competition incentive? Yep, and it happens in a load. So Beaconsfield, my parents near there, mm-hmm. It's the same there. A number of garages have the same owner, and funnily enough, the prices all stay the same. So where's the incentive? There's no competition. I end up going to Costco, personally.
Oh, you go to Costco. Their fuel is quite competitively priced, isn't it? I think I've never actually been there. But
it is. It's reasonable. And then also, I'd say premium as well. Unfortunately, my car demands it. It's an Audi RS6.
Oh, so
I wouldn't say I'm struggling with fuel prices. However, it's an unnecessary extra cost when everything else is going up, and having less spending money in our pockets means that other businesses are losing out on custom and so forth. There's a huge implication.
Final question. The Chancellor said she's not going to allow fuel companies to get involved in gouging the prices to effectively make money. I mean, those are very warm words, but they don't butter the parsnips. I don't think they actually mean any action, do they?
No. I'm yet to see any action since 2022. Did they knock that 5p off? Did we see it? I don't think we did, truthfully. Again, some people say fuel prices are historically low with what the pound is worth now. I still say it makes up a majority of my bills, and probably most people listening to you this morning as well. It's a necessity, yep. And it should be priced as such.
Interesting point you make about all the garages in your vicinity and the vicinity of your parents as well, all being owned by the same company. So much for competition. Look, the Chancellor's words are right, but it's whether she can back them up. James, thank you. Finish with this, what is it? It's a text. Jesper, imagine if we swapped faster to renewable energies, this nonsense wouldn't be a problem in the same way at all. Well, you're right, it's whether the grid could cope with that massive demand. I guess that might be an issue there, but that's the last word for me, for I am done for another day. Now, if you missed any of the show, listen back on our free Global Player app or the LBC app, where you can also stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinions. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. That's it. I'm back tomorrow. James O'Brien, the other side of the news on LBC. I'm back with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and I hope this isn't an unfair question, but we asked it yesterday and we didn't get an answer. Do these clowns actually know where petrol comes from? The idea that the man who has successfully resisted calls to add to the chaos, which inevitably sends the prices of oil rocketing, he has resisted calls to join Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu's ridiculous war. It's like a memo has gone round from what passes for Kemi Badenoch's brain, and everybody is supposed to be attacking him today for a 6-month distant mooted rise in petrol prices. I appreciate that most of them forgot how to use their brains in 2016, but this is surely one of the finest examples yet of how the Tory establishment ecosystem has gone potty.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, oil prices have risen again despite the release of millions of barrels of emergency reserves in response to the war in the Middle East. It was hoped markets would stabilise, but Iran has continued to attack ships in the Gulf overnight. The Strait of Hormuz, a key waterway for energy shipments, remains effectively closed.
International journalist Isaman Rashid is in the United Arab Emirates and has spoken to LBC.
Just looking over the entrance of the Strait of Hormuz, and in the very hazy distance, I can see dozens and dozens, if not hundreds, of cargo, tankers, vessels, all currently anchored down, and they have been for around 8 or 9 days now, because the Strait of Hormuz is completely blocked by the Iranian military.
LBC has discovered that ISIS is encouraging its followers to target the FIFA World Cup this summer. The terror group has named the event as a priority target to commit attacks. Security services haven't responded to a request for comment, but it's understood the situation is being monitored. You can read more on our exclusive story on the LBC app. A cabinet minister has defended the severance payment made to Lord Mandelson after he was sacked as US ambassador. Files show that the Treasury agreed to a settlement of £75,000 following his dismissal last September. It's also emerged Keir Starmer was warned about the peer's links to Jeffrey Epstein before appointing him. Speaking to LBC this morning, the Paymaster General, Nick Thomas Simmons, moved to justify the payout.
Employment tribunals are what are called cost neutral. In other words, you can win an employment tribunal, but you still will not, in ordinary circumstances, usually recover your legal costs. You can see why, on a numbers basis, you have someone who is claiming £547,000, the documents show us, threatening to go to a tribunal, have a dispute. It's negotiated down to £75,000. You can see why, from a numbers point, taking legal advice, the decision was made.
Peter Mandelson denies any wrongdoing in relation to Jeffrey Epstein. The fairness of the student loan system is going to be examined by MPs. The Treasury Committee will look at increasing concerns about repayments and interest rates. And workers at John Lewis and Waitrose are going to get an annual bonus for the first time in 4 years. The retailer has reported stronger profitability. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 42 at 10,310. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.15. LBC weather, windy with some heavy rain spreading across northern areas of the UK. Some patchy rain in the southeast, a high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
We all love a good meal, but there's no feeling quite like cooking one. Whether it's everyone at yours for a Sunday roast, or after-school sausage and mash. Quick, simple, gone in minutes. One thing brings it all together. Ah, Bisto. The original gravy. Rich, smooth, and unmistakable since 1908. When the gravy makes the dish, make the gravy. Ah, Bisto.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Good morning. It's 3 minutes after 10 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Something rather extraordinary has happened. It's as if the planets have aligned in an almost magical way. If you are kind enough to listen to this programme on a vaguely regular basis, you'll be aware of my somewhat fraught relationship with what other programmes describe as features, or regular features, recurring features. So what normally happens is I come up with an idea that we all agree is great fun. What larks, eh, Pip, we say to each other. And then we try and get some production made for it. And that takes months, and my enthusiasm for the feature wanes slightly. And then the production turns up, so my enthusiasm comes back. And then, because I have a slightly patchy brain, I forget about the feature for a few weeks. And for reasons that I've never fully grasped, so do my top team of crack operatives. And then we remember. And then if we're very, very lucky, occasionally the feature then settles back into the furniture of the programme and does become a regular recurring feature, like on a proper programme presented by a grown-up. That's the fraught relationship that we have. If you were listening yesterday, you may be aware that we have probably stumbled into a new feature. But that's not the extraordinary thing that has happened, because on today's programme, we are going to go feature-tastic. Not only do I have a reverse ferret special, that's a feature that is only 2 days old. And technically, it's not even 24 hours old yet, because we didn't do it at the top of yesterday's show. It features the sound effects of ferrets, for example. And we have a magnificent example of reverse ferrets undertaken by the great and the good of the British media, courtesy of the release yesterday of the Peter Mandelson papers and the collective amnesia that has gripped the entire British media and political establishment about what they all said when Peter Mandelson was originally appointed. So we've got to... Don't let me forget any of this, by the way. I figured if I tell you at the top of the show, you'll be more likely to remind me. It's a reverse ferret special. We've then got, and this is where things begin to get really exciting, we've then got my all-time favourite missing word round. So this is a headline from which I will remove a word and invite you to guess what that word is. And this is quite a big clue. It is my all-time favourite missing word round. It is impossible for me to convey how much joy this headline brought me because of the word in it that I am going to remove. That's probably too big a clue. Let's not do that again. So we've got a reverse ferret special. We've got my favourite ever missing word round. And then we've got a marriage. If I was Cilla Black, the late Cilla Black, I'd be making jokes now about buying a hat. We've got a marriage of two different features. We have got unhinged headline, marrying this morning in one of your newspapers, missed information. It's a thing of genuine magnificence. I'll give you a little bit of a clue on that one. Do you remember when people were wanging on about snowflakes all the time? So if you were lucky enough, and I think a lot of it is luck, to possess empathy, if you cared about your fellow human, if you cared about decency, kindness, human rights, any of those things, if you cared about any of those things, if you were, for example, opposed to bigotry, to racism, to homophobia or transphobia, to anti-Semitism or Islamophobia, if you cared about any of those things, you were a snowflake. Do you remember that? Everyone would be called a snowflake because they cared about humans too much. That was the mark of a snowflake. Look at that snowflake over there, they would say, or write, or tweet. What a snowflake they must be because they care about, sometimes they even care about humans that they've never met and never will meet. Down with them. And these people now are getting very upset about banknotes. They also get upset about flags and statues, all of which, as you may have noticed if you're paying attention, are inanimate objects with no feelings. So if you care more about inanimate objects with no feelings than you do about human beings who bleed the same blood that you bleed, then you are a very tough and robust individual. If you care more about humans than you do about inanimate objects, you are a pathetic snowflake and a beta male, I think, or female indeed. And that's where this extraordinary marriage of an unhinged headline to a missed information will take us a little bit later in the programme. All that's missing, as many of you have already pointed out, and as I had managed to overlook, is a woke watch. We don't currently have a woke watch. If anyone can bring us a half-decent woke watch by close of play today, then this will be a show for the ages. This will be a show in which pretty much every sound effect that Keith has at his gnarled and stubby fingertips will be deployed in the course of a single programme. Because we've got the reverse ferret special, we've got the missing word round, we've got... It doesn't actually have any production, does it, the missing word round? Should we do a bleep or something? No, all right, sorry. You're busy, are you? Okay. We've got the unhinged headline, marrying missed information, and if you pull your weight and stop expecting me to do all the heavy lifting every flipping day on this programme, we've got, hopefully got a woke watch as well. That could be extraordinary, couldn't it? It could be magical. I don't know what the equivalent would be. Do you see that New Zealand bowler who got 5 wickets in succession recently in a first-class game? It'd be a bit like that, except not. Where do we begin today? 8 minutes after 10 is the time. We begin with this, frankly, unbelievable. I don't use that word very often. I normally say extraordinary. We have an unbelievable aligning of the planets. I am, as you know, completely obsessed with the psychology, the mental gymnastics, and unfortunately, as has become increasingly clear, the weapons-grade ignorance of all of the people in the business of sharing